it, actually. Time travel. In the first hour, I'm going to talk to time travelers. You. Those of you out there who claim to be time travelers. Now, in the second hour, we're going to have a very serious guest on time travel. David Anderson, Dr. David Anderson, PhD, is a former United States Air Force officer, flight test engineer, and scientist who developed a passion for space-time study while conducting research at the prestigious Air Force Flight Test Center. Now, listen to this. For the last 20 years, he has been formulating and developing his breakthrough concepts in space-time physics and the study of time. His work led to the development of what today is called the time warped field theory. His research holds the first promise for the development and application of practical time control technology. In 1995, Dr. Anderson founded the Time Travel Research Center. Today, the world's most advanced research laboratory dedicated exclusively to the study and development of time control technology and its application. His company also sponsors an organization called the Time Travel Research Association, which networks time travel information and interests from more than 80 countries around the world. Now, as you know, many of our nation's top theoretical physicists insist that with a proper amount of energy, time travel is definitely going to be possible. Therefore, if time travel is going to be possible, if that is an accurate scenario, then one might reasonably ask, well, then where are the time travelers? They ought to be here, right? They ought to be here. And I suspect they are here. Now, I'm not saying that when I begin picking up lines here in a few minutes, requesting to talk to any of you who claim to be time travelers, I'm not saying that these people are real, and I'm not saying they're not. That's for you to judge. All I'm saying is that it is reasonable to assume that if time travel will eventually be a reality, then there should be time travelers here now. There really should. But this hour, what I want to do is talk to people, you out there, who claim to be travelers in time. Believe me, it's interesting. Strange, but interesting. So if you're a time traveler, call me. That's all we're going to take calls from this hour. People who claim to have arrived here, be here now, through time, through whatever method. Coming right up.
Do you want to melt away excess body fat and trim those unwanted inches without strict dieting or strenuous exercise? Now it is possible. Introducing Ultimate Slim, the all-natural, scientifically designed formula to metabolize your fat into energy. Within minutes of taking Ultimate Slim, you're going to feel more energetic. Within days, you're going to start losing inches and your clothes will be looser. Within weeks, your waist will be thinner. I recommend Ultimate Slim because it's perfect if you want a lean, sexy body but don't have time for a lot of calorie counting or long, sweaty workouts. What are you waiting for? Burn fat the quick and easy way. Look great, feel great with Ultimate Slim. And when you order two bottles of Ultimate Slim, you'll get a third bottle absolutely free. And by the way, now you're going to get a free bottle of new Ultimate Slim PM liquid formula, an additional $30 value. Take Ultimate Slim PM at bedtime to help burn fat while you sleep. Ultimate Slim and Ultimate Slim PM, they're the perfect solution for the ultimate body. So call now, 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. One more time, 1-800-557-4627.
Have you heard the inside information on gold? Did you know that some gold investments actually were up over 30% last year? If your broker perhaps has not told you about investing in gold, call Lear Financial and ask why. Forbes, the Financial Times, even Merrill Lynch are all reporting why big money is moving into gold. Now listen to me very carefully. In 2001, gold funds were up over 30%, outperforming all stock funds, which wasn't too hard. Now physical gold is up 12% in just the last 12 months, and the experts project even greater returns this year. Learn why gold may be your best investment in 2002. Protect what you have. What's happening with the economy is obvious. When that happens, gold goes up. Duh. Call now before more of what you have is gone. 1-800-474-4259. Tell them you heard it from me, Art Bell. I'll send you a pre-gold profit kit and special report titled Why the Experts Picked Gold in 2002. The number to call is 1-800-474-4259. That's 800-474-4259. Information is power and then money.
Have you ever suffered from back pain, shoulder pain, joint aches, or arthritis? Well, I'm here to tell you about an amazing product that'll relieve your pain in just 5 minutes. That's right. Guaranteed pain relief in 5 minutes. The product is called Super Blue Stuff, and I'm thrilled to introduce them as a new sponsor of my show. Super Blue Stuff is all natural, made of whole leaf aloe vera, herbs, MSM, and emu oil. This emu oil has been used by the Aborigines for thousands of years in treating muscle aches and pains, and it has great healing and penetrating properties. All you do is rub it on the area in pain. You'll feel it work almost immediately and with your order. These good folks at Blue Stuff will even send you enough free samples to give to 5 of your friends. To try Blue Stuff now, call 1-888-876-BLUE. That's 1-888-876-BLUE. You can also visit the website at bluestuff.com. Blue Stuff, for guaranteed pain relief in 5 minutes. Call today, 1-888-876-BLUE. That's toll free, 1-888-876-BLUE.
Time travelers only. If you have traveled in time, or you are presently a traveler to this time, then we want to hear from you. Otherwise, the phone lines are closed, but for that group, they are certainly open. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Art?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Connor in Strongsville, Ohio, outside of Cleveland.
So how's Ohio this morning?
It's doing very nice, very nice.
Yes.
I'm listening on WTAM.
Big one, yes.
Yes. I was calling in to... Hey, I give you some mad props for listening to some of these people.
You're what?
Giving you some very good praise listening to some of these people. They're dealing with them very well. And I also propose a question asking, I was wondering if all these people are calling from time traveling. You seem to be a big fan of time travel, so why haven't you called yourself back?
You know, that's a pretty good question. Suppose my answer would be a little flip. I'd probably say, looking at the way my lines ring, I probably couldn't get through. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I really am serious. Although I can imagine that if I were, you can bet that if I traveled in time, mm-hmm. back within, say, the years that I've been on the air, or forward to whatever years I have left to be on the air,
mm-hmm.
I sure as hell would want to call my show. Except I suppose that people would... They'd really doubt me, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I'm waiting, you know, to maybe hear, like, someone I know, or imagine hearing yourself on the radio, you know, 12 years in the future, or whenever someone's calling you, you know, a young kid or something, hearing yourself on the radio.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of weird.
It would.
Yeah.
Now, I have old tapes of myself when I was a virtual youngster on the radio, because I've been on the radio all my life.
Yeah.
That's kind of like time travel. Really.
Wow.
Makes me sick to listen to myself back then.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to pose a question. And can I say something to some people here in Strongsville?
Strongsville?
Yeah, outside, it's my where I live.
Well, if it's a general sort of thing.
Yeah, I just want to say vote Connor for senior class president. since I'm running, and so I just want to say that to anyone who's listening.
You called me up to give a you're running for class president.
No,
senior class president. Or no, somebody else is.
No, that's me.
That's you?
Yeah.
So
I called you up to propose the time.
You're giving yourself a plug for senior class president on a national radio program.
Yeah.
I saw a movie. Did you see that movie about the girl who was running for, I think it was senior class president, matter of fact. There's a whole movie about it. They were sabotaging each other, and, oh, it was vicious.
No, I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, well, I can't think of the name of it offhand. Somebody will come up with it.
Okay.
Well, you should watch it. It'll help you with tactics.
Well,
what are you promising? What's your platform?
My platform?
Yep.
I'm trying to give back to the senior class of Strongsville.
Less homework?
You know, give back to the students. You know, there's some things that maybe they're not happy with at the school.
It was called Election, by the way. The movie was simply called Election, so you're going to want to see that as soon as you can.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, to write it.
Anyway, you're going to give back what?
Whatever the students need to talk to me about. I mean, if they need to talk to me about something, you know.
If you are elected, do you have power to help them?
Some power. I mean, that's another thing I want to work on. I want to make the student government at Strongsville High School more powerful. So, because it's rough tumble to deal with, but I'm running and staying strong in the election, so it should be a pretty good race.
What makes you want to get involved in politics? I mean, that really is what it is. It's politics, you know.
Well, the main reason I want to get involved in politics is because I basically care for the people in my school. That's not just a crap answer. I mean,
yeah, but it sounds like a crap answer. You've got to come up with a new way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Clinton had what? I feel your pain.
I don't even want to come up with a slogan. I mean, I have lots of friends and I care for them.
You've got to have slogans.
Well, I have a couple slogans I put as jokes on campaign signs.
Don't believe
all the rumors, vote for Connor.
Hey, that's good. That's good. The pictures weren't of me, vote for Connor.
that's a pretty good one.
All right, well, thank you very much, and be sure and see the movie Election.
You are on the air. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Yes. We're here.
Yes, my name is Robert, and I am not quite a time traveler. I'm from a little bit different dimension than yours.
I think that may be virtually the same thing. You claim to be from another dimension.
Yes, Senator.
I'm not a senator.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That's a little slip there. You haven't testified in front of a group lately, have you?
No, not at all.
I don't know. There's no other way somebody would say yes, Senator.
My original dimension I'm from, you are a senator of Arizona.
Well, I'll be damned. Of Arizona?
Yes, basically...
Senator Art Bell. Arizona Senator Art Bell. Boy, that has a ring to it.
Yes, it does. Definitely does. Basically, what happened in my dimension, the South won the Civil War.
South won the Civil War?
Yes, at the First Battle of Bull Run, basically that's where the Civil War ended. And I am from, in an awful dimension, the Confederate States of America.
Wow! If the South won the Civil War, all states would be Confederate, wouldn't they?
Well, no, actually the original Mason-Dixon line holds. There is the United States of America, which runs...
At the Pennsylvania-Maryland border, roughly?
That's where it is now. Pennsylvania-Maryland border and also up into Canada.
Really?
Yes. Shortly after that, basically, Lincoln resigned. I loved watching your Civil War. A couple of years ago, you had the PBS special, and it was a big hit in our dimension because it was something that, you know, we never thought that had been possible.
So that special appeared in your dimension as well?
Well, it didn't appear in my dimension. We just basically brought it back. We've been able to...
What about history between the ending of the Civil War, which you say was different, and now?
Yes.
It must be indeed in your dimension entirely different.
It's entirely different. Basically what happened is the United States went ahead and invaded Canada, the Confederate States of America have basically went all the way to your Panama, which is basically Mexico all the way to Central America, are just Confederate States to us. They're just another flag on our stars and bars.
So really, in that dimension, we physically possess part, how much of Canada?
It's all of Canada.
All right. I've really wanted Canada for a long time, and so...
Bart, if you ever come over, if I ever meet you, I'll have to take you to where I live, and...
Can you do that? Is that possible?
Yes, that is possible. Basically,
what about this terrible conundrum of not being able to meet yourself, though? I mean, what if I came with you and met Senator Bell? Wouldn't I possibly blink out?
No. You're just a different person from him. You're not sort of difficult to explain. I don't know. My job basically is pretty much to go out. I'm retired.
I can hear the Southern accent in you. No question about it.
Yes, but I'm basically retired. My job was to go out to different dimensions and sort of scout them out and see.
You sound
basically how they're different.
You sound a little young to be retired.
Of course,
who am I to talk?
I've had rejuvenation.
Rejuvenation.
Yes.
Another advantage in. By the way, how should we consider this dimension? Is there a way to phrase where you say you are from? Is it a fourth dimension, a fifth dimension?
Basically, we've explored right now about 50 different offshoots of the planet Earth.
Holy smokes! You mean different dimensional renderings
of
Earth?
Basically, from our dimension, how time is split differently. There's a lot of big. Of course, there's a couple of splits where the United States lost the Cold War. We, of course, there's several where we lost the Civil War. There's one where basically Nazi Germany won.
Nazi Germany won?
World War II.
Boy, what a hellish place that must be.
Yes, it is. It's extremely bad. I've talked to some of the people. They popped in and they saw swastikas in Richmond and they left. That's about
Holy
all we
moly. Know. Now, our theoretical physicists are presently in this dimension beginning to realize there are other dimensions. Some of our best are saying that. But they're speculating 10, some more, and you're saying as many as 50.
50 that we've explored. There are a lot more. We found part of this technology in Europa, which is has an intelligent race. I don't know if it has it here. We haven't really got to the point where we could explore.
We're very curious about Europa in this dimension, thinking it might have some form of life, but probably fairly primitive.
Well, this is, I don't know quite how to explain it. This dimension's probably, it's fairly dangerous to go to.
The one we're in, you're talking about
yes.
the one?
Yes, the one that we're in currently, Senator, yes.
Stop with the Senator stuff already.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'm not a Senator in this dimension.
Okay.
And I don't much have respect for a lot of them either.
Okay, well then I apologize.
So, in fact, it worries me to even think that I might be one in another.
Okay.
But Arizona would be a good state.
It's a very nice state.
No kidding on this dangerous dimension stuff. I mean, I'm reading this environmental news, and the ozone layer is getting gigantic to the point where they say it's going to be affecting us up north here the way Australia is affected. The ocean is warming. The storms are getting worse. Things are going to hell in a handbasket, really.
Well, we're concerned about that, and we're also concerned about, I guess, how conspiratorial the United States government is.
Oh, we are so conspiratorial.
It is.
Even
it is
my
true.
Listeners, believe me, my listeners are so conspiratorial. Of course,
yes.
I am too. I am too, now that I think about it. But why are you here?
Basically, like I said, I'm here to scout out different areas to determine whether or not to actually present ourselves to governments. That's one of the things I do.
Do you think that's a good idea, or do you think that's a dangerous... No, not such a good idea.
It's a very dangerous idea. You're weak to basically say that I'm from the Confederate States of America.
That's going to get you in trouble right away.
It's going to get me in trouble. We did settle the slavery issue when Robert E. Lee was president.
So you're saying then that the Confederate States did not maintain slavery?
No.
Perhaps a longer period of time, but not...
It basically it went away. He had what was called a Lafourche plan, which slaves were able to buy their freedom, and they had a choice of going back to Liberia or staying here. And if they stayed here, they had to basically move out of the state that they were originally enslaved in. And at that time, we were basically we were annexing Mexico, and there was a lot of land down there.
So, boy, in your dimension, we have a lot more land. I mean, we swallowed Canada in one quick bite, and then a lot of Mexico as well, huh?
Well, the Confederate States took Mexico. We took Mexico, and then what you call the United States took Canada, yes.
So you all were rebels with a real cause?
Yes, we were. I guess now...
Bunch of land grabbers is what you are.
That was quite a while ago.
I know. That's what they say here, too. So, what is the future for this dimension? Is it a rosy one, or...
I don't know.
A kind of a poopy one?
I guess the thing that we're most surprised about, since we went to a lot of dimensions with this level of technology, is the lack of space travel that you have done. I've seen other areas with the same tech level or the same technology that you have, and they have already have a colony on the moon. They've already landed people at Mars. They're towing asteroids.
Listen here, I'm pressed by the clock. I've got to take a break. Do you want to hold on? You're really an interesting person.
Yes, I can hold on for just a little bit longer.
Just a little longer?
Call Big Indian, 800-898-9040, 800-898-9040, or go to bigindian.com and save.
Good morning, Mr. Higgins. Your 11 o'clock appointment wants to reschedule. Your lunch meeting is set for 1:30. Oh, and I have you penciled in for an automobile accident at 3, but I need to know whether you prefer a fender bender or a three-car pileup.
Nobody plans an accident. That's why GEICO's there 24 hours a day to get your claim rolling the moment you call. Many claims are settled within 48 hours. Our customers like the way we handle claims almost as much as they like saving money. GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. That's 1-800-947-AUTO.
I have a new specialty product for you from the Seacrane Company. And I have one of these, and I can tell you it is kick butt. Would you like to protect yourself from power blackouts? Would you like to create your own power from the sun? Well, listen to me. Announcing the new Ready Power. It is the first practical backup power and power generation system for everyday use in the home. We're talking almost $2,500 here. About $2,500. It's not cheap. It will silently produce clean power. It will automatically turn on when the power fails. The included solar panel makes extra free power. It's a big, really big solar panel. It would go on your roof. It's easy to assemble, easy to use, may qualify for state rebates in some areas. It comes with a full 5-year warranty made here in the USA. And with Ready Power, your lights are going to be on in your home when the rest of the block is in the dark. But it's not cheap. Ready Power is $2,499.95. But this thing is built like a tank. I'm telling you, it's built like a tank. I've got one myself, and it has performed flawlessly. So if you would like a pretty big extra edge if the power goes off, here you've got it. Yeah, it's not cheap. Doing this kind of thing is not cheap. But they've got the entire package together for you for $2,500. If you want one, Call the Seagrain Company in the morning, limited quantities, of course. They're at 1-800-522-8863. Best doggone $2,500 you ever spent, if you can crank that kind of money out. Oh, man, what peace of mind it gives you. That number again is 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863 on the web. Yes, of course. At ccradio.com.
Thank you for waiting, caller. Is there a big... isn't dimensional travel a type of time travel?
Not really. As far as our scientists can tell, no, not really. What happens is, I guess there are... Time is same. When I go back to my dimension, it's the same time as it is here.
Ah. So time is linear in each different dimension.
Yes, as far as we know. I guess one thing...
So that means Art Bell, the talk show host, and Art Bell, the senator, do they live to be different ages?
Yes. Yes, they can. I know of you, at least in one other dimension, where you're not going to believe this, you host a talk show on the moon. You are basically broadcast from the moon.
From the moon.
From the moon.
I would entertain... that option, if it were given to me. Listen, there's somebody who would like to ask you a quick question. On my international line, where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Larry. I'm calling from Sudbury, Ontario, 300 miles north of Toronto.
Actually, territory that isn't even actually Canada.
That's right.
To my present.
There is an Ontario. It's just another flag in the United States.
All right. It's Robert, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I have a question.
Sure.
What are the cars like there? Are there Chevys, Ford? Do they drive differently? Same kind of transmissions? Some of the names of the cars?
Really good questions, yeah.
Basically, we have what's called in Atlanta, which is our equivalent of Detroit, is what's called Trafalgar Ironworks. And they have a variety of different models and makes.
So in other words, that is your Detroit?
Yeah. Atlanta is basically our Detroit. Basically, I guess what would be called a lot of y'all prefer to call Negroes blacks, right? I want to make sure that I don't offend anybody, but blacks.
Blacks in this dimension would be proper.
Right? Okay, would be blacks.
Yes.
Okay, blacks moved up into, I guess, the Iowa area, and there's a town, very large town there called New Jerusalem. Which is the
New Jerusalem in Iowa?
The United States.
Now, he asked about cars. Can you describe any automobiles?
Pretty much they would be the same. Ours mostly run on electric. We don't have
Figures.
A lot of diesel.
Figures.
We in the South prefer a big muscle car.
How can you have a muscle electric car? I guess you could if you had enough electricity.
Do you have gasoline at all?
Yeah. Do you? What?
Hello?
We lost him. We lost him. He's
Uh-oh.
Gone. He's gone. We lost him.
He said,
out of gas. He said, well, he said he only had 10 minutes, and I guess
that's true.
His 10 minutes are up.
But I love questions like that, Art.
Well, so Detroit is virtually in Atlanta, huh?
Yeah. Interesting. I also wanted to ask him about trains and aircraft.
How would you guys feel being consolidated as U.S.? Never having been...
Well, if it was the natural evolution of history, it would be fine. You know what I mean? As long as you don't force the issue. If that's the way it had happened, well, that's the way it had happened.
That's right.
We're at the same time, Canada and the United States are both very different.
So you wouldn't have that medical
very
system?
Very much the same.
You wouldn't have that medical system up there? You wouldn't have... But you would have...
Well, that medical system is on the shaky legs right now. There's
a lot
of controversy.
I've heard that, yeah. All right, well, listen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you take care. Caller from Canada. Well, in this dimension. First-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Art, how are you?
I'm quite well. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing quite well, thank you. Listen, it's been a long time. I've been listening to you for years.
For years now, huh?
Yeah, yes, I have.
Are you a time traveler?
Well, yeah, something happened to me because of your show.
What?
Well, first of all, it goes back to 1995. I'm located up here on the Russian River in Santa Rosa on KSRO country, and we were flooded. Our house was like basically cut in half. I was forced then to work many days in a row. I'm a truck driver. I've listened to you for years over the night, like you have mentioned.
Yes, yes. The time travel part.
Well, the time travel part goes like this. I was working so many days that I caught one of your shows, and I listened to Malachi Martin.
Yes.
And he told me and or to the most of your audience, you know, how to pray, how to accept acceptance. And something happened, man.
What?
I'm tired. I've gone like, you know, I'm running illegal. I'm going like 23, 24 days in a row.
I hear a lot of truckers do that. You know?
Yeah, but, you know.
And so you had an epiphany on the road somewhere.
No, man.
No?
Something happened, and suddenly I got touched. I felt like I got hit by like a little golden wand or whatever that they hit me on the top of my head.
You
right
sure that you just like didn't bang your head on as you were getting out of the truck or something?
No. I made sure that's not what happened. If anything, it woke me up to a lot more than what I knew in the past, and I started to see into the future. And what I started to see into the future was this. I didn't see so much of the doom and gloom. What I started to see was the things that the natural changes. We're going through a tremendous rate of change right now, and it includes all of us. But most importantly, what I saw in a flash, in an instance,
is
I
what?
What I saw was a better place to be. In other words,
how far ahead is that? Because right now the signs, I mean, the canaries are dropping like flies here.
Yeah, I realize the canaries are dropping like flies. I realize that we've got global warming and there's chunks of ice, like, you know, melting and breaking
right,
off.
Right, so then when does it get better?
The better part is around the corner, and I would say maybe in 10 years. What I saw was something that flashed upon me.
So you didn't you didn't really travel in time. You saw ahead in time is what you did.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how you would say that. I mean, all I know is that something touched me.
Were you actually, okay, let's put it this way. Were you actually, seemingly, actually there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to hear that.
No, hold on a second. I know what you're going to say, Art.
What?
Hold on, man. No, I mean, this is something that happened in an instant.
Well, what
about
a moment? No, I understand that. But look, there would be critics who would say, "You said you were driving illegal. You were doing a million hours. You shouldn't have done it. You had a brain spasm."
No, it wasn't a brain spasm. No,
a trucker's brain spasm.
Why?
How do you know? Because that would be the criticism. I mean, especially with what you said.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how I know. First of all, it was a warm feeling, and it was a feeling of acceptance, and it kind of glowed the whole cab of inside my truck after so many years of not really believing, so to speak, being a hard, kind of tough guy, and all of a sudden realizing and seeing something that was so cool. I said, you know what, there is something else out there, and it's powerful, and you know what, I got an immediate calm about me, and for a moment, in a blink of an eye, in a blink of your eye, what I saw, what was the state of the future, and what
this what you saw was a rosy future. All right, I've got it. So, trucking into the future. Guess we'll call that. I don't know. A trucker. I can't rule out the possibility that he whacked his head as he got out of the truck, or that his cab warmed up when he sort of fell off the cliff mentally after driving for so many hours. You've got to allow that at least as a possibility. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hello.
I've been doing some dimensional traveling.
Yourself, huh?
Yeah.
So again, well, okay, then let me ask you like I did the first caller, who apparently had a prepaid phone card that ran out.
Yes, sir.
Is time linear in every dimension, as he suggested?
Yeah.
It is. And from what is the dimension like that you are from?
It's very similar. And that's one problem that they had there was when I was sent. They gave me this special card that I was supposed to, when I come back.
You were sent.
Huh?
You were sent.
Yeah. That when I was supposed to come back, I was supposed to check it to make sure I was in the right dimension.
Yes.
And it didn't match.
Oh, brother. So in other words, you're saying you were tossed here by mistake.
Well, we found out that there are so many multiple dimensions that it's almost impossible to get back to your own. You can get back to a similar one.
But getting back to precisely where you were is almost not possible, so it's like you're stuck here then.
Very difficult.
Well, if this one is kind of like the one you came from, or with very few, what are the differences? Can you describe any differences? Do they have dogs there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Houses?
Yeah.
Detroit? Cars?
Right. The main
ozone depletion, ocean warming, all the problems we've got?
Basically, yes.
Any difference at all?
Well, there'd be differences like, okay, like that one guy, you know, you'd be like the senator, or, you know, different senators, different congressmen at different times, you know, little things. But basically, even if we lost the First World War in some dimensions, it'd end up almost the same. There's different points of history that just absolutely have to happen.
Well, what about Canada and Mexico? And, you know, I take it there is a Canada, there is a Mexico.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Well, there was one that I went to where Martin Luther King didn't exist. Malcolm X didn't.
These would be radical. Very, very different. Very different then.
Right. So the civil rights movement didn't happen.
Didn't happen?
Didn't happen.
Then what would the state of blacks be in your dimension versus this one?
Well, in that one, they were still segregated out. You know, whites-only areas and malls, you know.
Well, that stinks. So you're in a, really, you should count your lucky stars that you're in a better place.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah, that dimension was bad.
Are you bummed out that you're stuck here?
No. It's okay.
Do you frequently tell people what you're telling me now?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
That's probably a good idea.
Right.
A lot of them wouldn't take it real well.
Not really.
Well, listen, I certainly appreciate your calling me.
Okay.
And you have a good night, sir. West of the Rockies, wait a minute here. Let me do this again. Oh, boy. West of the Rockies, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. You're on the air.
Yes. This is Bob in California.
Hello, Bob.
I met myself when I was 8 years old. I met myself.
Now, you see, I've heard you can't do that, but you're saying you can.
I met myself from the future. It was really, really weird. When I was 8 years old in grammar school, I'd play alone during the recess period.
Right.
Like behind a tree with my little army men and my cars.
Oh, yes, I played with army men.
And this guy shows up, and he's, like, dressed all in white. It was almost like a uniform, and he had gray hair, almost white.
Yes.
And I kind of recognized him at the after the conversation, and I think it was me. But he asked me a lot of questions. Yeah, he knew everything.
Oh, that's really intriguing. So, in other words, your older self from the future or a future came and met you.
Right.
How did you recognize yourself? How did you know it was you?
Good question. I think I recognize my teeth because I've got these very distinct bicuspid teeth that stick out, and I never had orthodontics. And I guess I had my permanent teeth by that age.
A sort of a Bugs Bunny-ism?
Yeah, well, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
But very identifiable.
Distinctive. Yeah, it's like a fingerprint. And I recognized my teeth. And later, I also recognized the mole that I
didn't... Other than your toothiness, how did you look? I mean, were you aging reasonably?
Well, at 8 years old, you're not all that discriminating, critiquing an adult. But I was clean. I had great white clothing, and I had gray or white hair. And I just asked myself a lot of questions about my brother and my parents. And things like that. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's kind of like I went back in time to psychoanalyze myself.
Now you're confusing me.
Well, see, it's like sometime in the future when I'm 60 or 70 years old, I somehow...
Obviously, you will go back, right?
I get access to a time machine or some kind of astral projection or something.
Whatever it is, you will go back and meet yourself at 6 years of age or whatever.
Well, I think it was closer to eight or nine.
Eight or nine, yeah. Whatever.
And,
I've got it.
I wish I could tell you some information. I wish I had given me a few hints of, like things that happened in the future that I could tell your audience. But
most of the questions that you had, I mean, obviously, I understand, they'd be personal.
Yeah, I think I just went back there to kind of get a glimpse at myself when I was a child.
Which end of it do you really remember, or do you remember both ends? Do you remember...
No, I only remember what occurred, you know, when I was eight. You know, I'm just 36 right now.
Right.
So I guess sometime in the future when I have white hair, I've got a little bit of gray already.
Huh.
I've got this mole that showed up under my eye that this guy had.
Same mole, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah, at eight I didn't have it, but I've got it about 5 years ago.
And well, we're getting there. I mean, this is nearly enough to convict you if it was a crime. A mole and a toothiness and other general characteristics that you could see where you must have been really weird.
Well, I it didn't really dawn on me until this mole sort of started growing on my cheek, and then I sort of thought back to that memory, and as my face kind of grew. You know, think of yourself when you were eight. If you were to meet yourself today, would you recognize yourself?
What an interesting question. I was an annoying little SOB. I'd probably recognize myself. So, I guess, but I'm not, now that I think about it, I'm not really sure. So, but you obviously did, and what a weird thing it must have been.
I thought I just should share it with you, and maybe you can...
And how weird it must be to think that you are going to do it. I mean, this is something that lies in your fairly immediate future.
No. I have white hair in the person I met, so I think it's probably 30 years.
Yeah, well, 30 years, but 30 years, sir, cosmically, is a, you know,
yeah.
It's a blink in time. There's nothing. It's nothing. All right, well, listen, thank you very, very much for calling.
Okay.
I've got a scoop. We are going to talk about time tonight, as we already have been, but now with an expert. I'm Art Bell, and from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Her hair is hollow gold, her lips sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold, she's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll turn her music on you, you won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis eyes.
The After Dark newsletter has been reporting subjects that we talk about right here on the show. And just like the show, After Dark has been evolving and changing and keeping folks guessing. You never know what you're going to get next, but it's always a lot of fun. Give yourself a treat and subscribe. Just log on to my website, artbell.com. Go to the library link on the left. You'll find the After Dark link in the menu there. Click, and you can subscribe on the secure server. Or call any time of the day or night, toll-free, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You'll receive this four-color magazine every month for a year. Subscribe right now, and you'll get 2 free issues, 14 for the price of 12. Subscribe online at artbell.com or call right now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.
This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. You've never done anything so hard in your life. You don't understand how you can finish. It takes inner strength and desire to become a Marine. When I finished, I was like, I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me and said, "Good morning, Marine."
PFC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES.
Operator, and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
All right. It's my favorite subject. Of them all, frankly, it's time travel. And we've got somebody who's doing the real research, the hardware research.
He's amazing. He's Dr. David Anderson. I had him on shortly before I left last April. And I think you're going to want to hear what he has to say. And we'll catch up on what he's done. All of that immediately ahead. But rest assured, my friend, that first hour is going to be repeated as soon as we get into repeat at the end of the program. Oh, one more thing. I've had enough fun with you, I guess, on the webcam. That photograph on the webcam site where you would normally see me live. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you 15 minutes to look at it on the website, and then I'll turn on the webcam again. But I thought I'd just leave it up there for shock value. Some listener sent it after the program. I called Keith, said, hey, why don't we put it up there where the webcam would normally be? And he said, yeah, that'd be fun. So if you want to see it, go ahead and see it. In 15 minutes, it'll be gone. Are you one of the millions of people who wake up with back pain every morning? Up to 80% of people experience back pain at some point in their lives. This is something, believe me, I know a lot about. Maybe you head into work every day just wishing you could have stayed in bed a few more moments, right? Well, I want you to learn about the revolutionary Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort and what sleeping on air can do for you. Call 1-800-985-7100 right now, and they'll send you a free video and a brochure that will answer all your questions on this remarkable new way to sleep. The Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort uses adjustable air chambers. They allow you to set up each side of the bed to your exact level of comfort, firmness, and support, and that setting is your sleep number. So call 1-800-985-7100 today. The call is free. There's no obligation. It's just a wonderful opportunity to learn more about how you can get the best sleep of your life. The telephone number again, 1-800-985-7100. Tell them you want to sleep like Art Bell. 1-800-985-7100. Have you ever suffered from back pain, shoulder pain, joint aches, or arthritis? Well, I'm here to tell you about an amazing product that'll relieve your pain in just 5 minutes. That's right. Guaranteed pain relief in 5 minutes. The product is called Super Blue Stuff, and I'm thrilled to introduce them as a new sponsor of my show. Super Blue Stuff is all natural, made of whole leaf aloe vera, herbs, MSM, and emu oil. This emu oil has been used by the Aborigines for thousands of years in treating muscle aches and pains, and it has great healing and penetrating properties. All you do is rub it on the area in pain. You'll feel it work almost immediately and with your order. These good folks at Blue Stuff will even send you enough free samples to give to 5 of your friends. To try Blue Stuff now, call 1-888-876-BLUE. That's 1-888-876-BLUE. You can also visit the website at bluestuff.com. Blue Stuff for guaranteed pain relief in 5 minutes. Call today, 1-888-876-BLUE. That's toll free, 1-888-876-BLUE. The March issue of After Dark is not for the faint of heart. If you're the least bit squeamish when the March issue comes in the mail, you might think twice about reading it. Not only are there scary articles about the legendary Mothman creature and the dangers of root canals, but there are pictures that very well may gross you out. See for yourself the revolutionary last-ditch treatment that's saving limbs from infection and gangrene when surgery and antibiotics have failed. It's not pretty, but it's great reading, and it's all in the Strange Medicine issue of the After Dark newsletter. It's a good time to get on board and subscribe. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, and you'll get 14 issues for the price of 12. That's 2 free. Free, the number once again, 1-888-727-5505, or subscribe online at artbell.com. Just hit the library link to the secure server to order the one and only After Dark newsletter.
Now comes Dr. David Anderson. He is a former United States Air Force officer, scientist, and flight test engineer, founder of a company called the Time Travel Research Center. This company has pioneered the development of a time warped field technology. Did you hear me? Pioneered the development of a time warped field technology that is demonstrating that real time control is much closer than most of us realize. His company and research association are
dedicated exclusively to advancing the science, technology, and research that will deliver practical time control for us all. Dr. Anderson, his most recent publication, is a brand new video called Time Travel, Journeys into Time. Ha-ha. This video traces the complete history of our views on time and time travel, from the ancient views of time to the latest groundbreaking technologies that are ready to change our world in the most exciting ways you can imagine. Here is Dr. David Anderson. Doctor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Art. It's good to be here, and it's great to have you back on the air.
Thank you. For grins here, because that's about all that are left after the program tonight, I take it you heard at least a portion of the first hour.
Yes, I did.
Where do you come down in all of that? Where do you think there is any sort of reasonable evidence that we did not go to the moon? What do you think?
You're gonna put me on the spot here.
Sure. That's what I do for a living.
Well, you know what's interesting? The only way I can answer that question is that it's kind of the same way I look at my life now. Even though my background is in hard science and physics and mathematics, I've learned that by opening up my mind to any possibility that has plausible scientific foundation, that
right.
You can learn a lot. So I certainly wouldn't exclude anything your guests were saying, and I think it's worth listening to.
That was a good answer. That was almost like the guy from NASA. All right. There is probably nothing I'm more interested in, and I'm not even sure why, than time travel. It has always been a really, really core fascination for me, if we could travel in time. You know, I had a remote viewer on the other night, Ed Dames, who suggested that there has been intervention here on this planet, that the intervention has been done by those things that we know as UFOs, but not manned by aliens. He said, interestingly, rather manned by men. Not exactly humans as we know them now, but humans from the future who have reached back to try and fix the balance of power by sabotaging a couple of programs that would have upset the balance of power and keeping us from destroying ourselves. If time travel ever does become a reality, and I know probably you can argue, gosh, it already is, Art, and we'll get to that part, but would something like that kind of manipulation, do you think the nature of time would allow that sort of manipulation?
I think the answer is that absolutely yes. I mean, there's nothing within our laws of mathematics and physics that would preclude that from being a possibility. Hmm. And also, you look at the evidence. Not only our legend, but our legend and folklore are filled with stories about UFO sightings and contacts with aliens from other worlds.
Yes.
By kings, princes, doctors, lawyers, common everyday people. And it could be very possible that these stories are not about time travel from a distant world, but instead that they're from our own future. And you look at the sightings, many of the creatures that have many human characteristics, maybe they're time travelers from our own planet visiting us from years ahead in the future.
Well, in my mind, if time travel ever can be, or is going to be, then the obvious question, I forget who it was, some famous person said, well, then where are the time travelers? And the answer might be, gosh, we're taking pictures of them all the time. I've got a very startling recent UFO photograph, things that blink in and blink out. They don't just always zoom away. Sometimes they virtually disappear. Who's to say these are not visitors from our own future?
Yeah, that's a very famous. It was by Stephen Hawking, the British physicist. it was called his chronology protection conjecture. If time travel is possible,
where are they?
Where are all the time travelers from the future? And he actually presented that almost as scientific evidence because of the lack of visitors. But you're right, absolutely. There is much evidence that, these alien sightings are perhaps time travelers from our own distant future.
So where are the time travelers? They're right here, and occasionally we even get photographs.
Yeah. There's another commonly held belief, too, now in the scientific community that possibly, you know, any physicist will tell you that time travel may be very, very difficult, but it certainly doesn't violate the laws of our math and physics. The work we're doing, the work we've seen by Dr. Wang from NEC within the last year in superluminal light propagation, shows that this is possible.
Well, all right, a good example is Dr. Michio Kaku. He's one of our nation's foremost theoretical physicists.
Yes.
And he agrees that time travel may well be possible. But then he talks about the power that would be required to achieve it. And putting things in perspective, he's suggesting we would have to be in control of the power of a sun, or even greater power, in order to actually, I don't know, bend time or to go back in time or forward in time, that we could do it when we get to that level. I take it you have issue with that.
If when all boils down to being said and done with our research, we can talk about it, we can talk about the applications, the technology, excuse me, but what essentially our great accomplishment is that we've found a way to create a time dilation at a much lower energy level. That is the bottom line foundation of our entire research.
A time dilation at a much lower energy level. All right, let's hit it one at a time. When you define the term time dilation.
Essentially meaning that the rate at which time passes can be sped up or slowed down is probably the simplest way to put it.
Time can be sped up or slowed down.
Correct.
Effectively resulting in time travel?
Eventually, yes. I mean, right now what we're doing is we can create a small self-contained, what we call a time warp field, and within that field we can accelerate the rate at which time passes or slow down the rate at which time passes relative to the time rate outside of the field.
How do you know you're doing that?
Beginning about 3 years ago, we brought our first what we call our time warp field generators online. Initially, in our first years, in 1997, we did work with both mechanical and electrical clocks, and we demonstrated the time dilation effect. In 1998 was a big year for us because we did our first test on a living organism. We actually used a living plant organism, and we were able to accelerate and slow down the life cycles of that living plant organism.
So okay, again, one at a time here. You just used a term, time warp field generator.
Yes.
What is that, pray tell?
Well, essentially, the theory that we introduced, it's a theory I introduced back in 1988. It's called time warp field theory. It's a discussion, an approach, and a technique that allows the creation of a field that will allow you to accelerate or slow down the rate at which time passes. The generator that we use to create that field is called a time warp field generator.
And by what means does it do that? In other words, what kind of field are you generating? I'm going to just take a stab in the dark here. Some sort of electromagnetic field? Is electromagnetics? Or can you not talk about this?
No, I can talk. I can talk about certain characteristics of it.
All right. Is electromagnetic energy involved?
Yes, it is.
I knew it. I must tell you, I did a program last night in which I started getting these calls, Doctor, from people who had... You didn't hear last night's show, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, people who have had MRIs. You know what an MRI is, right?
Yes, I do.
Incredibly large electromagnetic fields. And I started getting calls, Doctor, from people saying, you know, I saw things, technicians who would say, I saw things, entities, whatever you want to call them, and I've seen them for years working around MRI. And I would never talk to my associates about this, and a couple did, and they were told, just shut up, keep your job, you know. But I've always thought that very large electromagnetic fields, since we're electromagnetic beings after all, might distort something in a near field and allow something to be seen. Now, I realize that's pretty far out, but it relates in a way to what you're doing, because what you're doing also is electromagnetic. So does that sound so wild to you?
It's difficult to say. Does it sound so wild? Maybe not. I mean, in our application, we use electromagnetics, but not necessarily in the same way that many people might expect us to say. I mean, our generator is very similar to, I guess, what I'd call a plasma generator, more of like a plasma generator that people would be familiar with in a high-energy physics experiment.
So you're saying you use an electromagnetic field to contain plasma?
Well, actually, that's pretty close. We have an antenna that induces what we call a high-speed rotational magnetic field, electromagnetic field in the core. Then we have an injector system that establishes a special environment, and then we use a high-energy laser array to induce the time warp field. So there is an electromagnetic component, but it's not... When we talk about time control technology, we quickly move to the Montauk Project.
Betcha. I was going to just stop you right there, and I was going to say, do you realize what you just described is so close to what... I've interviewed people supposedly involved in the Philadelphia experiment. They gave technical details, and they had large electromagnetic fields along with rotating RF fields. And that's starting to sound an awful like what you just said.
Actually, not completely. We do have a rotational electromagnetic field,
yes.
But it is a minor part of what we do. A critical part of what we do is an injector system where we establish we induce a gas reagent into the core of our generator, and then we use a high energy laser array. That reagent in the laser array is really what initiates and controls the field. However, it cannot be initiated without the electromagnetic field. Once we open up a time warp field, that electromagnetic field, the rotating electromagnetic field we have, really tapers off. We use it for control, but it's not as important after the field is opened. As within the Philadelphia experiment and the stories of the Montauk Project, that was a key critical element.
But you don't necessarily rule out the possibility that in what was described in the Philadelphia experiment, or even in just very large electromagnetic fields, that anomalous things might be observed?
I certainly there's scientific plausibility for that. What's interesting, Art, is that my background is 20 years as a military scientist, doing what I do, 20 years of background in mathematics and physics, but I learned recently, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, if I'm going to, if we're going to be able to move forward with our research, we have to look at it, the information on time and time travel from many perspectives, and I've become familiar with many people all around the world, right here locally on Long Island, people like Peter Moon and Preston Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
You hear stories of the Montauk Project. Some of them are very extreme. Some of them have scientific plausibility. But what I've learned is that there is foundation in scientific plausibility in many of the stories about time and time travel, even outside of the mathematics and physics textbooks. I talk with people from the Federation of Damenher in Italy,
yes.
A cult that is based, their whole life is based on the study and worship of time.
Well, I interviewed Al Bielek, and I will give this assessment. I don't know how much of the audience will agree or disagree, but in the early hours of the interview with Al Bielek, he described in great technical detail the magnetic fields, the rotating RF fields, how they did what they did on this ship, and what they were trying to achieve. And technically, it sounded... Truly, it sounded sound. It sounded as though it were based in technical fact. Now, as the story continued and it reached the Montauk stage, I thought it began to get a little out there. But the early stages of what I heard about the Philadelphia experiment, they sounded technically pretty much correct, Doctor.
Yeah, there's a lot of information about... technical information about the degaussing of ships that was, these large electromagnetic coils that were put on the ships for maybe degaussing the ship to
yes.
make them undetectable to mines.
That's right.
There's foundation in these stories, absolutely. One thing I've learned is that it's worthwhile to listen and to study and for everybody to make their own assessment, but don't close your mind to it because there is scientific plausibility in a lot of these.
All right. So a time warp field generator... You have these, you've built them, you're using them, right?
Yeah, we're actually on our third generation system right now.
Third generation.
Yeah,
a lot of people in this country go, what? I haven't heard of this kind of research. What the hell is he talking about? Third generation time warp field generator? Why isn't this in the headlines? Why isn't this on the evening news?
Well, you know what amazes me? Well, actually, in many ways it has. We've been published in many articles, many television shows around the world. You know, Art, I think it goes back to a comment you made earlier. You said that time and time travel was one of your favorite subjects. What I don't understand is why aren't more people asking this question? You know, forget what we do and the research that we've been doing for 15 or 20 years and what everybody else is doing around the world. I mean, people, you know, it's my favorite dialogue is people ask what time is. Well, time is a really curious thing. If you ask anybody walking down the street if they know what time is, they're certainly going to immediately say, yes, absolutely. But then, if you ask them to explain it to you, they'll be at a loss, loss for words. And I challenge all your listeners to try it with a friend, a family, a stranger in the street. And what's amazing to me, I don't understand why more people aren't asking this question about what time is. It dominates our whole language, our life, our culture. We use it in almost every other sentence that we utter every day, but we don't understand it.
Well, I'm lucky in this regard. I could ask a lot of people who probably are calling right now, but instead, I luckily have Dr. David Anderson here, who's building time warp field generators, and I can ask Dr. David Anderson, what is time? And that's exactly what I'm going to do when we get back. So prepare yourself, and I'm sure you are prepared for that. Can you imagine, folks, if you could fire back, say, to the Roman age, check out a little bit of the atmosphere, something like that? We may be able to. Free. And by the way, now you're going to get a free bottle of new Ultimate Slim PM liquid formula, an additional $30 value. Take Ultimate Slim PM at bedtime to help burn fat while you sleep. Ultimate Slim and Ultimate Slim PM, they're the perfect solution for the ultimate body. So call now 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. One more time, 1-800-557-4627. All right, once again, Dr. David Anderson, and I suppose a time-traveling obstetrician would say, first you have time dilation, then you have a full-grown adult popping out. Sorry. All right, Dr. Anderson, I think it is important that we cover the nature of time, what time is, because you must first understand that before you could ever hope to move through it, right?
I think that's true. Okay. My first reaction should be, Mr. Art Bell is very glad you asked that question, and he's going to answer it now, because for as much as I've met people all around the world, I still have not had anybody give me a good definition of what is time.
Oh, no.
It is a fascinating question. But I'd certainly be glad to offer some insights, at least to...
give me your best shot.
Okay, well, you know, it obviously is a basic question to our conversation. You know, what is it that clocks are measuring? They seem to measure this unseen medium we call time that continues on with a never-stopping force, like that river that drags us along. We can't fight it, moving us through life to death. In some ways, last time we spoke, I talked about two of my favorite quotes. One of them is a quote, "Time is the fire in which we burn." That maybe says a little bit. Maybe we don't want to understand what time is. Maybe that's one of the reasons why we can't answer it, because it's so linked to our mortality.
No, I do want to know. I do want to know, and I want to even know about my own mortality and what may be beyond, if anything. And these two questions may coexist.
And maybe part of the answer is that time is a place where our rational minds bump into our own limitations. Maybe perhaps what we consider to be time, this medium, is somewhat like the ether we used to thought that permeated the universe. And maybe it's just something that's a product of our own biological and cultural evolution, maybe an illusion of our own mind.
Maybe it is. I've heard various references that make some sense. In the beginning, biblically, before there was anything, there really could not have been time because there was no reference. In other words, if there was nothing, if there were not two bodies, planets or a sun and a planet or something moving around the other, there was no reference of change. So in a sense, there could not have been time. And so then once the Big Bang, which we won't bother to get involved with here, occurred, and there were objects traveling moving away rapidly, there was a measurement that could be made. Yes?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there are many theories out there by reputable physicists that say time is a result of the expanding universe, or what we see as mechanical time anyway, as a result of the universe expanding.
Yes.
And that perhaps when it starts contracting, time will reverse itself.
And then, and so, well, maybe it will. Maybe it will. And things will start running illogically backwards. Is that what would occur if that happened?
I'm not sure if I agree with that, there is, I mean, it is a worthwhile discussion point. There are many theories out there on the subject.
Okay.
But when you talk about time being illusion, you know, the way we look at time, again, is a function of our own mind and biological and cultural evolution. You look at, just within the United States, look at the history of the Navajo Indians that seem to have many ties to many of these subjects. In their language, in their ancient language, there was no past, present, and future tense like
right.
other languages.
Right.
They always talked about events with regards to their quality of happening, not happening in the past or the future or someplace in time.
No, you're right.
It wasn't even a structure of their language.
You're absolutely right. I mean, now we even have this atomic clock in Boulder that helps all our other clocks stay dead on time. But what are we measuring? What are we really measuring? We've successfully invented this method, this clock. We look at it, it ticks, it's right or wrong, accurate or not, measured against something. But is it not really all our own invention?
You're absolutely right. It's probably, you know, in that case, there is a mechanical aspect to time. We like to be able to measure things. But what really is it that clocks are measuring? I mean, you know, in some ways, time is a label we put on something we don't understand, much like gravity. You know, we could sit here and we could talk for hours about all the equations of gravity and the forces and all the formulas we have. But what they are representations of something we observe. It's not a definition of why is there gravity? Why are two objects attracted and pulled towards each other? We don't know the answer why. And time, in a way, is the same thing. It's a label we put on something to help make our lives a little bit easier.
Well, with respect to gravity, I always thought we were held on the planet because of its mass only. But I'm told by people like Professor Kaku that, no, we're actually here more because we're being pressed down on than we are held by the mass of Earth. So, you know, the experts are a little confused over this whole issue. They can't really... I've heard gravity defined in an awful lot of different ways by very knowledgeable people.
You know, what's interesting, when we talk about what is time, one of the most interesting people, you could talk about the views of Homer, Plato, Aristotle, but there was a philosopher, St. Augustine, and he was the first one, and it was right around, I think, 400, the year 400, and he the first one really to document and introduce time as an illusion of our own mind. And what's interesting is, when you look at what's happening in the new physics, in the world of quantum physics, and you look at some of the things that are coming out of the particle accelerators and super colliders, they're more in tune with the views of the Navajo, the ancient Buddhist, Hindus, and Taoists that treated time as an illusion. Matter of fact, if you talk to somebody who's a master in the Buddhist religion, he'll look at you and he'll be confused as to why you think time moves. You know, they look at us and say, why do you think time moves? Time stays in its same place. The past, present, and future all exist at once. They're not separate.
I'm sure you've heard the expression, time is God's way of ensuring that everything doesn't happen at once.
Exactly. It's one of my favorite quotes.
Oh, is it? So we have this thing, but you're suggesting you really believe, as they do, it's kind of an illusion.
I think I stick to the ground that that time is really still a place where irrational minds bump into their own limitations. It's a concept that's difficult for us to understand. You know, it's amazing to me. We've known since the 1920s, the first scientific proof came in that time was not a constant. In the 1940s, it was proven over again, 20, 30, 40 ways that, yes, time is changeable. You look at what's happened in the last 20 years. You look at Dr. Wang at the NEC who was able to inject a pulse into a cesium block and actually have it leave before it finished entering. Absolutely amazing. But how many people are walking down the street today fascinating with, you know, what is time?
Not enough.
Yeah, it's amazing. Maybe some ways we shrink all the magic in our world and our universe to the size of our daily routines and material possessions. I don't know. But it amazes me mostly that more people are not fascinated or asking the question, you know, what is time? You know, what really is it?
All right. That's probably as close as we're going to get. I mean, that's kind of a quick tour of a discussion of time. It doesn't mean that we understand it.
You know, exactly. I've asked the question everywhere, and I still am amazed. I think my favorite answer is somebody told me time is a sphere with wings. Sometimes the wings fly together and it moves forward. Sometimes they fly backwards and it flies backwards. And sometimes they just fly around in circles on itself and it doesn't move. So perhaps right. That's the best.
All right. You have constructed where did you come up with the idea or the design concept for a time warp field generator?
Well, actually, it was why I was doing work in the Air Force. My specialty at the time was space-time physics navigation, why I was a scientist in the Air Force, and we were trying to figure out why our satellites were drifting. I don't know if many of your listeners would know, but for probably about 30 years, there was a problem with satellites that were in orbit around the Earth, in that we had the mathematical models that would show where the satellite should be, but at the end of every year, they were off by 1 or 2 or 3 meters.
And are you referring to, for example, the polar orbiters that could be tracked specifically, or the geosynchronous satellites, or all of them?
All of them. And anybody who's been involved in any satellite research, any astrophysics knows this, is that satellite positions, there was this mystery surrounding them that they knew every year that they were going to be off in position by 1 or 2 meters, and it was not due to error of equipment, it was due to some phenomenon we didn't understand. Anyway, we created a mathematical model to help resolve the discrepancy, and after I left the Air Force and further investigation to that, we discovered a new relationship between time and energy that became the building block of what we're doing today.
Well, what did you discover? In other words, why was there this error in an absolute calculation? Do we now know?
It's a phenomenon of general relativity called frame dragging. What it means is that a massive body that spins has a tendency to twist time and space around it. Even a body the size of the Earth or the Moon. And when we came up with our new mathematical model, it accounted for it. We didn't know exactly how we did it. We knew we accounted for it and solved the problem. It took a few years for us to really understand what was inside.
Field, frame dragging?
Yeah, it's a classical physics term, frame dragging. It just means that a massive body will actually twist space and time to a very, very small degree around it. A body the size of the Earth or the Moon will twist it to a very small degree.
Now, obviously, the very large planets would, to a larger degree.
Yes.
And something as powerful as a black hole to an extremely large degree.
Yeah, and something like the sun. For instance, we know that if we look at the a radio signal from a distant quasar as it passes near the sun, or if we bounce a radio signal off a planet,
yes,
when it's on the other side of the sun or near the edge of the sun, we can actually measure the effects due to the gravitational effects of the sun. So it doesn't take a body much more massive than the sun or the Earth to see the effect.
So the sun pulls it, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, it actually twists space and time around it. The element of gravity itself can dilate or change time. The fact that a massive body is spinning, it adds another small effect to that dilation that is called frame dragging.
All right, you know, I can buy that. So taking that as the basis of something that can occur, you've designed the time warp field generator, and you claim that you can actually change, what's the right way to put it, achieve time dilation, using your phrase, with lower energy levels. How low, relatively, can you begin to see? Because after all, even though a planet may not exert a lot of pressure on time and space, you have shown it does exert some.
Yes.
How do you then distill this to achieve it at a lower energy level Because a planet's got a lot of energy, after all.
Well, I'd like to go back and first comment on your question from Dr. Keiko, and I have a lot of respect for Dr. Keiko. His work is phenomenal. His view he presented is a very common view today, that time travel to actually control or alter time rates would take a massive amount of energy.
Yes, as much as the sun might have.
As much as the sun might have. It's a good, very accurate number according to classical physics. What we've done is in this model that was discovered when we were analyzing and solving the satellite position problems, we discovered a relationship between time and energy. And maybe I can explain it to your listeners a different way.
Okay.
We all know, we've all held, as children, we've held magnets in our hands.
Sure.
And we know that if you put two poles together, sometimes they'll push away, sometimes they will attract each other. Mm-hmm. Now, if you hold them very close in your hands, it works fine. Well, what happens if you stand on one side of the room and you put the magnet on the other side and you rotate it around? It'll have no effect on the magnet on the other side. What happens if you take one magnet and put it in Los Angeles and one in New York? Obviously, it's not going to have any effect. Now, if you could build magnets that were, you know, extremely powerful, is it possible? Yes, it's possible within the laws of physics, but it's very impractical. Then you take the same time. So that's magnetism. But what about electricity or electric fields? When the first radio came, it was a simple spark that would transmit energy only a few feet. Could you do the same thing and use just an electric field to send a signal from Los Angeles to New York? The answer is yes, but it would take a massive amount of energy. But what we know today...
You mean an electric field? You mean, for example, the old spark generators?
Exactly.
They were gigantic electric fields, very wasteful, very broad, very powerful. They would do the job, but not really very well.
Not really very well. But as soon as... But when it was discovered that there was a coupling between an electric field and a magnetic field, what we call electromagnetic waves, which are your listeners, many of them are tuning to if they're not getting a real audio feed off your website.
That's true.
Once we discovered that, now I can take in my hand a small battery, a single 9-volt battery, put it in my hand and power a transmitter that can send electromagnetic waves millions of miles into space.
You're exactly right.
That coupling, as soon as it before, when there was just magnetism and electric fields, it was infeasible. Within the laws of physics, it would be possible, but it was not practical. That's what, all we've done is discovered a coupling, just like between electricity and magnetism, between time and different forms of energy that allow this to happen at a much lower power level.
I understand the analogy. It's a really good one. You're absolutely right about that. But I don't understand the specific thing that you have done that has allowed this.
Well, the specific thing that we've done is we've created what we call a general relative. You know, when you talk about dilating time, people always talk about special relativity and general relativity, meaning that you can dilate time two ways that are accepted today with very fast speeds or very heavy gravity. Our field is more along the lines of a general relativistic effect. Essentially, though, you ask about the generator. We have an antenna configuration. We introduce this rotational electromagnetic field. It's very large. It's probably about 7 meters high, the antenna configuration itself, so about 20 feet. The time warp field generator itself, we have injectors that inject a gas reagent that help us create a very large amount of energy. When we initiate a field, we require a lot of energy.
And you're talking just about an electromagnetic field, right?
Yes, this is rotating electromagnetic field. We set that environment up, we inject a gas reagent, and then we have a laser array of 12 high-power lasers around the core of the field.
Yes.
And we use those lasers to excite the reagent to create the amount of energy to open up the field. Once the field is opened up, the power on the lasers is pulled back a little bit. The rotational electromagnetic field becomes a less important component. Initially, though, the electromagnetic field is important to make sure we have a stable field.
And then all of this is, you actually have an antenna. You load this into some sort of radiator, some sort of antenna.
Yeah, actually, the antenna itself, we have 16 elements around the generator that help create the rotational field in a way that will contain I'll just say contain the energy better as we open up the field.
What have you actually created? I understand you're using the rotating magnetics, you're using the lasers, and then you have created something, and you can back off the energy levels, and
yes,
the creation continues. What did you just create, Doctor?
What we created was, let's just say, it's an area within space where within that area, and it's a spherical field, within that spherical field is an area where time rates will pass slower or faster depending on how we set up the field.
Good Lord. What sustains this field after you've backed off your power levels?
Well,
in other words, you're into some sort of a creation here that I'm almost grasping, but I'm not quite there. What sustains this when you back off on the power levels?
Well, it's the sustaining part of it is not as confusing to us. Essentially, when we open up the field and it becomes stable, when we back off the power, the laser array we use, we modulate the lasers that are using to, you know, maintain, that we use to maintain the field. And we have an array, as I mentioned, of 12 of them around the field today.
Right.
They're used to control and keep the field stable. We have a gas reagent. Sometimes during a test, we have to actually re-inject a gas reagent into the field to keep it stable, but it's mostly primarily used to open it up.
Yes, but you've started something that you can then back away from and is self-sustaining to some degree, right?
Yes, it is. It's very self-sustaining. The only thing that maybe in some areas that we have some questions is when we create this field, it becomes a little confusing to us because we start not understanding what we see in terms of power levels. Matter of fact,
all right, there you are. Doctor, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back, folks.
The March issue of the After Dark newsletter is like nothing you've ever seen. We've included images of some of the most dramatic before and after healing photos you've ever seen. Find out about the miraculous treatment that's saving lives and limbs from infection and gangrene. Plus, do you have a root canal? Read about the dentist who thinks root canals could be destroying your health. Plus, find out who my favorite guest from the last few years is. It's not who you may think. And of course, there's the evil Mothman. See the 9/11 photo that could be the Mothman at the World Trade Center tragedy. What an issue this is. It's all in the March issue of the After Dark newsletter. Call right now 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You get two free issues, 14 for the price of 12. The number to subscribe, 1-888-727-5505, or log on to artbell.com. Hit the library link to the secure server to order. Call now, 1-888-727-5505.
Bizarre stories are the order of the day on Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM. This caller says his elderly sister is being visited by extraterrestrials.
It started one night about 2 months ago. She got in bed and something grabbed her by the foot.
I hate these kinds of stories.
Yeah. She pulled her foot back and they grabbed her foot again and stuck a needle in it.
I really hate those stories.
Yeah. And they pulled the covers back and sprayed the back of her head and stuck a needle in her head.
Then she ran to get her brother to help.
He thought she was imagining it, so he went and laid on her bed. And they sat on his feet.
They sat on his feet.
Yeah.
And then we'll jump into some other areas.
The best radio in the world, if you can afford it, you know, if you've got the money, then we have the best radio in the world, the CC Radio Plus, hands down, runaway, no contest, best radio in the world, $159.95, which is a cutesy way of saying $160. It's a lot of money for a radio. This is a lot of radio. It's like the last radio you'll have to buy. It's AM. And the AM reception is unparalleled. You will hear stations other radios don't even know exist. FM also, of course. Superb. TV audio. weather radio, NOAA Weather Alert. The entire radio is designed to render human speech, particularly so that talk shows are come in with particular clarity, but, you know, it's so much more than that. It's got a digital clock built in with an alarm, a lighted dial, a sleep timer, simple one-button memory, very intuitive radio all the way down the line. Power cord is included, or if you want to use it on batteries, it'll go 250 hours on four D-cell batteries. To me, this is different, but the modern equivalent of the transoceanic. Remember that great old radio by Zenith? I mean, this thing is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So if you want the best, here's where you buy it. Sea Grain Company, call them in the morning at 6:30 a.m., 9:30 back east at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863.
Would you like to feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? Now there's proof. The effects of aging can be slowed down and even reversed with HGH, human growth hormone. For some time now, you've heard me talk about the incredible age-reversing benefits of HGH. Well, according to thousands of articles, higher HGH levels can help you look and feel younger. That's why I take Ultimate HGH, a natural formula to help boost my body's own production of HGH. If your goal is to help improve energy, stamina, lose unwanted fat, diminish wrinkles, enhance memory, immune function, and vision, then Ultimate HGH is for you too. Why let Mother Nature get the best of you? Call today and order Ultimate HGH. And when you order two bottles of Ultimate HGH, you get the third absolutely free, about $33 a month. Now that's a tremendous savings off the typical $100 a month for comparable products. Plus, with your order, you'll receive a free book on HGH, a $20 value absolutely free. So call my good friends at Great American Products and order Ultimate HGH today at 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. 1-800-557-4627. Now, back to Dr. David Anderson, who's located way back east. Where are your laboratories?
Our laboratories are located in Long Island, New York.
Yeah. Interesting place, actually. A lot of interesting and sometimes worrisome research is being done on Long Island, isn't it?
Well, yeah, with I guess at the Brookhaven labs here, and sometimes get a lot of attention for different things, but actually it's a pretty quiet place.
What do you think about Brookhaven? I mean, is there the possibility, just very quickly, that they could push a button and we could suddenly have a minor bang, which would be all it would take?
I don't think so. Sometimes people ask us that about our facility. They're afraid we're going to open up a black hole that's going to destroy the Earth.
Yes.
I don't think that's a possibility, actually.
Okay. All right. I want to go right back to where we were. We were talking about the field that was created, and then you're able, of course, once the field is created, to back off on power levels. And there is some aspect of this that you don't fully understand?
Yeah, that's correct. One of the things that I would first say to ask your listeners is not to challenge these ideas, but to challenge themselves a little bit. When you ask about the technical description, what we have is it's like a plasma field generator. This is a plasma field generator is nothing new. It's been around for a long time. What we found a way is that in the boundary area, the outside of this plasma field generator, the boundary area has a unique characteristic that it can actually isolate time rates. So time can move at a faster rate on one side, but move at an independent rate on the inside. And that's what we've done. There's many times a lot of mystique about this and a lot of doubt about the technology. One of my favorite objections is the objection that to dilate time or to change time rates, it'll take an infinite amount of energy. Well, let's go back for a second. Our research has shown clearly that time rates can be changed at a much lower energy level than,
yes,
than what's been said in the classical physics. Look at the other law that just fell only about 7 months ago, that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. Well, guess what? That has fallen. It's been validated in labs all over the world that, yes, a wave can travel faster than the speed of light, and when it does, it will move in a negative time direction. Before, the theory was for anything to move faster than the speed of light, it would be impossible because it would take infinite energy. Now, a light wave has no mass, so there's not that type of energy, but the concept that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light is a dead one. Now, all the textbooks will tell you differently, but...
I thought your other analogy was very clear. The one that talked about, for example, a spark transmitter that's a blunderbuss making just noise all over all kinds of bandwidth, throwing it out all over the place, and yeah, you can get from here to there, but you've got to use enormous amounts of power to achieve it. And you pointed out you can take a little 9-volt powered transmitter on the right frequency and hear it on the other side of the globe. So, I mean, you're exactly right. I understand the theory of what you have done here. I don't understand, and I guess you don't fully either, what keeps that field going when you back away on it. That would seem to defy laws of physics.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, there's certain things we do understand. We know that inside the field, when we do certain things outside the field to modulate it, that we can create, you know, a certain performance, that we can accelerate time rates or we can slow time rates inside the field, actually make time move faster or slower. We know we can do that. We can reproduce it. It's very predictable. What we don't know is necessarily all of the whys. We also know that we see energy fluctuations. When we pull back on power after we open up a field, we know that according to the laws of physics that we understand that it should take X amount of power to keep the field open.
Precisely.
What we see is sometimes requiring more, but sometimes requiring less power. Now, that's what really fascinates us, because
when
we open up this field, well, either the laws of, you know, we have a field open that's being sustained at a lower power rate than our understanding of physics and our time warp field theory says is possible. So what does that mean? It means maybe our equipment is wrong, or our equipment is out of calibration or incorrect, and it's not. Maybe the laws of physics are wrong, which we don't believe so, or the laws of quantum mechanics,
but
we don't believe
you,
that either.
You can do it reliably, repeatedly, or you said sometimes.
Oh, okay, when I say that, what I mean is that we can create, when we create a time warp field, we can, I'll say it simply, we can adjust the time rate inside the field. We can speed it up.
Oh.
Maybe to about a factor of 3 to 4 times the time rate outside of the field. So we can actually make time pass 3 times faster inside the field,
but
we can slow it down. When we slow down too far, the field becomes unstable.
When you slow down too far, the field becomes unstable.
Yeah.
Does that suggest that ultimately time travel going forward is going to be easier to achieve than going back?
Oh, actually, that's a very accurate statement today, even without any knowledge of our research or any of the other research going on around the world. Yes, time travel in a forward direction is much easier and much more achievable today than time travel in a reverse direction.
Huh. All right, here's the next question I want to ask you. We'll leave the field for a moment. And let me ask you, how do you prove that you have accelerated or decelerated time? How do you do that? Within this field,
we've done it with I'll say three ways, and we're underway with our fourth way right now. The first thing that we did in 1997 and 98 was to do a lot of work when we brought our first time warp field generator online. It was small, but it was enough to do the first experiments. We were able to demonstrate it with clocks, reference clocks.
Okay.
1 clock outside of the field, 1 clock inside of the field.
Right.
And we are able to measure the time rate differences inside and outside of the field.
You're telling me you could actually see a clock in the field either running slower or faster than the reference clock?
Yes, and we did it both with not only with electronic but also with mechanical clocks as well, because a lot of people, you know, talk about the magnetic field effects on electronic equipment.
Sure.
That was our first demonstration, which was really our big breakthrough.
Okay, before you leave that one, how much difference in time could you observe?
Well,
not that it matters a lot, but because it just demonstrates it, period. But how much?
Let me introduce a term, because it's easier to talk about this way. If we have a field, outside of the field, we call the rate at which time passes the reference time rate. That's the time rate that we're seeing right now. inside the field, we were able so far stably to accelerate the field, the time rate 300% inside the field, which means a factor of three times faster. Which
Good
means,
Lord.
Which means when 3 hours pass outside of the field, we can have, or when 1 hour passes outside of the field, we can have 3 hours pass inside. And we've been able
Holy
to,
smokes.
Yeah, and we've been able to stably slow the time rate in the field down to about, I'll say about 35%, meaning that we could slow the time rate inside the field to that point, 35% of the reference time rate. So when 100 minutes pass outside, we can have 35 minutes passing inside.
Well, that's incredible.
that's
absolutely incredible. Oh, my God. And so then when you take the clock out, there is, in one instance, a 300% difference, and you're sitting there looking at two clocks with that much difference?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Holy smokes.
In some cases, when we initiate the field, we have to, you can't always visually observe the clock inside the field. The field has a characteristic of Doppler energy up or down, mostly because of the time rate and the boundary of that plasma field. When it does, sometimes the visual... I think everybody's pretty much familiar with the Doppler effect, the shift in frequencies.
Yes.
A time when you go across a boundary layer that has a time rate divergence, it has the effect of Dopplering frequencies. So sometimes when we adjust the field, you actually see an object appear to its frequencies, including its colors, to shift, which means eventually they'll shift out of the visible spectrum. It looks like they actually disappear, but they don't.
Oh, my God. Really? So, in other words, at least... visually, on occasion, the clock in the field to the eye disappears.
That's correct. That's correct. Matter of fact, a lot of people, we started a project when we first started this. We called it Project Dark Star, and everybody thought it was a sinister weapon of mass destruction. The reason the reason we called it Dark Star is that one of the first things that we learned when we put an object in the field and we changed the time rate in one direction, the actual visible light would be Dopplered down as it passed through the field, so the colors would start changing, and then eventually the light signals, the color, the visual optical image of that object passing through the field would be Dopplered down so far up so far that it would actually disappear, and the field would become black. And it,
how were you able to assure yourself? Because it must have been a really big question. Somebody standing there looking at this went, "Oh my God, look at that," and then the next thing would have been, you would have wanted immediately to know, is the object still physically there? Your answer is yes. How did you find that out?
Well, I think we know it's physically there. The answer
you
is yes.
Think?
We're virtually certain, okay, 99% certain that the object is still physically there. One of the most interesting examples we do, we use a mechanical clock that involves a series of rolling and dropping metallic balls. And when we create that slowed time rate in the field, just before the object becomes not visible, you can see the clock, mechanical clock, functioning at a lower speed. And you can see objects falling, these metal balls falling in the clock, actually slower, noticeably slower than they would if you were holding them outside of the field. And again, it's due to the time rate divergence. And that's a real powerful, that's probably from an experimental standpoint, it's the most worthless experiment, but from an emotional impact, when people see that experiment, they...
freak out.
Amazed, yeah.
Freak out, yeah. Freak out, I would. God, I'd love to see that. And then it virtually, to the eye, disappears. Would it disappear to a camera as well?
Absolutely, because all it is visible light. And actually, this Doppler effect is a huge problem we have, because you got to remember what we have. We have a 12-laser array firing into this field generator.
Right.
Okay, it Doppler's energy. You know, our laser energy, when we are accelerating the time rate field, when the laser energy hits the boundary layer, that plasma field, I'll call it a plasma field.
Yes.
It's Dopplered up, which means very quickly it can get to ultraviolet, and eventually gamma radiation, harmful radiation. So when we accelerate time rates and we have a living organism inside the field, we essentially are putting it in a radiation cooker when we try to go too fast and accelerate time rate. And doing that more stably with lower power is important to us.
All right. That was the first experiment. Now, I'm going to sidetrack you for just one second because, sure. Again, I'm blown away. I had this character, Dr. Anderson, near out in KCMO territory, about 25 miles from KCMO, our affiliate. And I've got to tell you, I called him Madman Markham. He was a young fellow who tried to make a time machine. And you know what he did? He eventually went out and stole a whole bunch of power company transformers. All right?
Okay.
For which he went to jail. I mean, I talked to his parole officer. The guy actually stole these transformers, hooked them up backwards to create this gigantic voltage, put together an electromagnet affair, and modulated it with lasers, and claimed that he was going to be able to time travel. He had actually thrown, I forget, a screw or a nut through it or something, the first model he made, and the damn thing disappeared and then reappeared. Now, this is a wild-ass story. I admit that. But it starts to sound an awful lot like, or at least close to, some of what you're doing.
See, now, that's interesting that you say that, because, you know, you're right. On the surface, it sounds like a wild-ass story. Now, people say our experiment is like the technical description of the Philadelphia. It's absolutely nothing like it. We're using lasers to create the energy, not the electromagnetic field. We're more similar to a plasma generator than a magnetic field, a pure, simple magnetic field. But what you're describing that Madman Markham did has much more correlation to what we're doing.
Well, again,
it's interesting. He sounds like an interesting person.
Oh, he was a very interesting person. Why do I say was? Because, as I said, he lived 25 miles outside Kansas City. I had all kinds of contact with him. He had rented a warehouse, had purchased a bunch of, some of my listeners helped him. He got these giant transformers. He was making this gigantic model, and for a mystery, we've never heard from the guy again. I mean, he's flat gone. It's been years now. And that's exactly what he was working on, these giant magnetic fields modulated by lasers. And I couldn't resist. It just sounded just like what you're doing.
Maybe he'll show up one day when you least expect it.
He said that. And I thought that when he walked through this thing, he would either turn into so much ash, or maybe he achieved what he was trying to achieve. The guy had cojones.
Do you know that's our biggest problem too? Is that when somebody steps into something like this, turning into ash? When we did our testing on living plant organisms, the bacteria. One of the problems that we've had is,
was that number two?
Yeah, that was actually plants were number two, and the bacteria was number three. But the biggest problem is that we're putting so much energy into this, we have to be very careful, or we create a radiation cooker, which is very harmful to a living organism.
Yeah. Well, when you tried it with plants, and then you said an organism, what happened?
Well, what was interesting when we first did their experiment with plants, you know, we have a spherical field. Initially, when we started our experiment, only those seedlings that were located at the very core of the field survived the experiment. Now, as we get better and better with the field, you know, when we did our first test, we put we used a set of seedlings that had a very predictable germination and life cycle, and we were able to demonstrate, you know, the acceleration and slowdown factor, but we also at the same time destroyed 90% of the sampling of seedlings that were inside the field almost in every experiment.
But in the 10% you did not destroy, what were you able to demonstrate?
We were able to clearly show that that we were able to alter the time rates. The species, I can't remember the name of the species, the Latin name for it, but and we have consultants who help us with this, but had a very, very predictable germination cycle and life cycle. What we're able to show in that the samples inside the field versus the samples outside of the field experienced a much greater time rate and a shorter life cycle, and vice versa.
I take it because acceleration is easier than the reverse, that you would accelerate them, it would be your best demonstration. So, in other words, a seed put in there versus the control seed outside the field would be well into germination?
Yes.
Holy mackerel. Yes.
You know, actually, accelerating time rates in our tech, not just when you talk about high-speed rocket ships to the future, it's time travel to the future is easy. Accelerating a time rate is easy for us. The only limitation we have is the amount of power that we're putting in. It's so high that, again, when we accelerate time rates too much, the upper limit we can go. We can go. We can accelerate time rates inside the field as fast as we want, but at 300%, there's enough energy that it's going to kill any living organism inside of it. At 200%, 250%.
Now, do you think, since you're constantly working on ways to refine this and therefore use less energy, do you think that ahead there's going to be a way to use less energy, achieving greater effect or more time dilation?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, in our first time warp field generator, a short story, had a field size of only 3 to 4 centimeters. When we moved the field size from 3 to 4 centimeters up to 30 to 40 centimeters, we cut the amount of power needed for that 10 times larger field by a factor of 10. So we increased the field size 10 times, but we cut the power by 10 times because we learned more.
Holy smokes.
Now,
all right, listen, we're at a break point here, Doctor. Hold on, we're at the bottom of the hour. Do you believe all of this is going on right here in the USA, good old USA, right in odd Long Island? And we've got the man who's doing it, Dr. David Anderson. So you might just be hearing something new tonight.
Not for the faint of heart. If you're the least bit squeamish, when the March issue comes in the mail, you might think twice about reading it. Not only are there scary articles about the legendary Mothman creature and the dangers of root canals, but there are pictures that very well may gross you out. See for yourself the revolutionary last-ditch treatment that's saving limbs from infection and gangrene when surgery and antibiotics have failed. It's not pretty, but it's great reading, and it's all in the Strange Medicine issue of the After Dark newsletter. It's a good time to get on board and subscribe. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, and you'll get 14 issues for the price of 12. That's two free. Free. The number once again, 1-888-727-5505, or subscribe online at artbell.com. Just hit the library link to the secure server to order the one and only After Dark newsletter.
All right, I can't resist. Dr. David Anderson doing a fabulous job tonight describing his research, laboratory research ongoing right now. Dr. Anderson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, here's this curious guy who's still awake after having invigorating hormone-producing debate in the first hour, Richard C. Hoagland.
Oh. Well, hey, I'm up working on a new book.
Yeah, all right.
So,
all right, so a couple of questions, right?
Yeah, Dr. Anderson, I heard you about a year ago when you were on Art Show the first time, and I tracked down your website through Keith Links, and I couldn't really find any specific information. In tonight's interview, you're providing a lot more details, but the thing that I want to know is, have you ever heard of the work of a Dr. Bruce De Palma, brother of the famous director Brian De Palma, a physicist, who about 20 years ago was duplicating, or actually you were duplicating what he did, replicating very similar phenomenon with purely mechanical rotating systems?
What exactly did he do, Richard? What was
involved? Well, he basically took a record changer turntable, standard, you know, one of those old Victrola types.
Right.
And he put it under, with proper shielding, an FM receiver. And he rotated it at 33 RPM and 78 and 45 and all that, and found that there was a distinct frequency drift that went away when he stopped the rotation.
You mean a Doppler shift?
No, there was a frequency shift in the received frequency of primary stations on the dial. Well,
that could be described as a Doppler shift.
Well, a Doppler would be if there had been motion, relative motion between...
Well, you've got motion, though. You've got the turntable going round and round.
But there's no... In other words, you don't have a motion between the receiver and the turntable. The turntable sitting under it, you know, kind of like right angles. Anyway, that was one phenomenon.
All right. Have you heard of that work at all, Doctor?
You know, no. Have I heard of similar work? Yes. Have I heard of Dr. De Palma? No. The similar work I've heard of in the former Soviet Union, they did a lot of work with... A small metallic rotating cylinders, half immersed in water, and trying to, I mean, there's many, you know, attempted documented papers out available on the internet and other sources about some of that work, but I'm not familiar with Dr. Palmer now.
Okay.
His other experiment was he took a Bulova Accutron watch. Remember those?
Sure.
With a little tuning fork?
Yeah.
And he did the same thing. He had it shielded so there was no electrical potential problems. And when he rotated it, the Accutron would change time. It would change relative speed. It would slow down. He was not in these experiments able to accelerate the phenomenon much as you're reporting tonight, but he was able to retard it and compare the Accutron after the run. You know, I forget what the numbers are. They're available on a website. The actual stuff is published. I can email you the links tomorrow. You can take a look at it. But it was significant, and I've been trying for years to get some folks to replicate it because it demonstrates that one can interfere with this energy relationship we call time at much lower energies than the standard guys like Kaku and others think is possible.
All right. Well, listen, Richard, thank you.
Well, there's one other one.
One other one, okay.
The most interesting one is the biology, because he put ordinary lawn grass on top of the turntable. The lawn grass was stationary. There was a metal shield to shield from electrical effect. The turntable rotated at the 33 1/3 RPM for several days. And the control experiment in a dark room with ambient light, so there was no phototropic effect, had a similar gadget sitting, you know, still with grass growing over it, non-rotating. And the grass growing over the rotating turntable grew in a very particular geometry and faster and farther than the grass in the control.
All right, Richard, as always, thank you, my friend. We'll do a whole show soon.
Excellent.
All right, later.
It was nice speaking with you.
All right, well, so some of that does kind of sound like some of what you have done, although using a different plan.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is I'm more, in some ways I show my conservatism, more from the classical physics world, but what always amazes me, in the former Soviet Union, many facilities, many research centers were doing work with mechanical systems to accomplish time dilation. And I got to admit that I'm not an expert on the mechanical end of systems. I can talk more about classical physics from the electromagnetic relativistic.
All right. Again, your first experiment involved clocks, and that was very dramatic. The second one involving seeds and plants, very dramatic. And what was the third and the latest?
The third, we've been working with different strains of bacteria. We've demonstrated on a living plant organism that our field, other than the 90% kill rate, can actually accelerate a process in a living plant organism. Now we're moving on into a single-celled organisms and different types of bacteria. We have not made a very controversial point with us surrounding us. We have not made, nor do we intend very soon to make a step to vertebrate animal testing, which is a big move. That's something that's not on the horizon probably for at least a year or two.
You know, that's really interesting. There's a great deal, it's very controversial, of animal experimentation that goes on. Why are you hesitant yet to give it a try? I mean, after all, just an animal. I'm taking a position I don't believe in. I'm just throwing it at you. Why is it not irresistible for you?
Well, it is. What's interesting, it is very, very tempting to us. First off, we know that we can produce performance, repeatable performance and results inside our field. We know we can do that, but we don't understand all the reasons why. Like I said, sometimes we don't understand why it requires less power than we expect it to. We
right.
also have that
right.
the risk to living organisms. We would like to understand more about why the field does what it does. Why does it, when we slow down the time rate, why does the field collapse and kill these living these plant seedlings? You know, the reason why the plant seedlings are damaged is because the field, the boundary of the field actually collapses, so the core of the field becomes much smaller, and any plant seedling outside of that smaller core gets cooked or is damaged, whichever way you want to look at it.
So you don't feel you have sufficient control of it yet?
That's one. First off, I want to understand it better, and so does everybody on my team. Second off, we already have enough attention in different groups who think that we as a human race should not be experimenting with time, just like with genetics and cloning and nuclear power, even though that's an older story. There are groups that protest. If we moved on to vertebrate animal testing without...
Yeah, I know you'd be in trouble.
We would just be... We're already...
But those who say you shouldn't even be investigating this area, they're full of it. What do they know?
Yeah, well, you know, the benefit of this technology for good applications, everyday applications, is it really is staggering.
Well, could this ultimately lead, in your opinion, to real-time travel? And by that I mean I hop in a chair surrounded by this field that you now have under control in some years, and I can actually go to 3 years away. Three years hence, I'll pop out on the other side, and I'll be 3 years in the future.
I think eventually it will be seriously possible. I there's no reason why it wouldn't be possible. However, I think in the next 4 or 5 years, the applications that will be seen will be more using time-controlled fields to accelerate research, medical, using a time warp field to slow down a disease progression or for disease treatment.
Sure.
Is probably the hottest area that that we have attention and are doing research on right now.
Okay, fine. But you're not ruling out what I just said.
I am not ruling out what you just said. There's no matter of fact, if any of us, it's kind of for us, it's the holy grail of space-time physics to be able to actually jump into a field and
okay, doctor.
Way into the future.
Okay, doctor. If I were to do that, and now we'll enter the realm of speculation, having specified that, if I sat in this chair in the field and I went 3 years into the future, what would you see in the chair after I left?
What would be seen in the chair after you left? At that rate, when you went into the field, this, I'm talking purely optical now, I'm not talking about moving into a parallel universe or anything like that. Purely optical, if we accelerated that time rate field, we would see the field become black. And essentially, you disappear. We wouldn't be able to see you. The field would have a very opaque appearance.
So I would now, for all intents and purposes, not exist in this timeline.
I think physically you exist in this timeline. But essentially, you move forward 3 years. But maybe you move forward in the 3 years outside of the field. Maybe only in 2 days inside the field. So in your time, you pass 2 days, and then you come out on the other end 3 years later.
Huh. Where would I land in 3 years? Assuming you still had the seat there, I guess I'd land in the seat.
Yeah, but
if your lab got in financial trouble and they put a shopping center in, what would happen to me?
Well, being that you're still in the same physical universe, you're just inside a field that is blocking the optical the optical path because of the Dopplering. I'll make you a promise, Art. If you jump in the field and we have to sell the lab, we'll make sure we turn the field off and let you step out before we just...
I know, but still, in all, if the field were to stop, I would be instantly back? Or could I go to the future and stay there?
No. The answer is, once you move inside that field, once you're inside the field, an object that experiences a faster time rate,
yes,
is moving through time faster than outside,
right,
or slower time rate. If we put you in that field and retard the time rate, so in 2 days, 3 years passes on the outside,
yes.
You're going to come out aged 2 days.
Do you remember the H.G. Wells Time Machine movie?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember when he pushed the lever forward? He saw things racing by him. He saw events. Of course, he went very far into the future, but things raced by him. If Art was sitting in the seat and you had the field going, what would Art see? What would you guess that Art would see?
First off, I think you would see nothing while you're inside the field. You would see nothing through the boundaries, again, because of the Dopplering effect. Anything that was visible light outside of the field, initially, if you were moving, if the time rates were only accelerated or slowed down to a small degree, you could see through the field boundary. We can do that today. But if you're talking about putting a person inside a field generator that size, and accelerate them so they can move forward or backwards in time. You're really talking about a Doppler effect that's not going to allow you to see any visible light through the field.
All right, as the technology presently exists.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay, but all right, then let's reduce it down to a smaller acceleration. If I were sitting inside the field, not cooking to death,
okay,
and I was able to see outside the field, what would I see? Would I see you moving very slowly, or would I see you moving very fast?
Okay, if it depends on which way we accelerate the field, but in one case, yes, you would see the motion outside of the field being slower, like when we do the mechanical clock with the dropping metallic balls.
Yes.
On the other hand, you would see objects moving faster and people moving faster outside of the field.
Uh-huh. Huh. Do you think that's all? You really believe it's all within the realm
yeah,
of?
Actually, we're demonstrating it today, and there's nothing. There's really nothing extreme about this. The real extreme thing will be, can we slow down time rate inside the field? The answer is absolutely yes. Can
yes.
we speed it up? That's the easy part.
Now,
but can we
this?
Reverse time inside the field? That is something we do not know if we can do. We do not know that yet. We know that we can put, we believe that the technology will allow putting a living person or animal inside the field and to slow the time so that while years pass on the outside, only a few days or a few minutes eventually will pass on the inside. So essentially you move into the future without aging. But what we can't do right now is we can slow the time rate like that, or we can speed it up so you age faster than outside, which I don't think most people would want to do. But we don't know if we can actually reverse time yet.
Okay, but how about this? How about the future, when your technology is refined, when the power levels are much lower and time dilation is achieved with a 9-volt battery?
Okay.
And could I conceivably take a field with me? And I guess what I'm asking is there any way you can conceive in the future that a human being could move from whatever year they're in now to several years or many years in the future and keep a stable field with them, keeping them there?
Oh, well, the answer is once you're there, you're there. Okay, in the case of the field, if you're inside our time warp field and we slowed the time rate so that only 2 days would pass while 3 years passed outside.
Yes.
When we turned off the field, you're not going to go back. You've only aged 2 days. I mean, this is pure classical relativistic physics. You've aged 2 days while everybody in the world around you has aged 3 years. When you step out,
uh-huh.
That's it. You're there. You're there 3 years in the future, having uh-huh. only aged 2 years over 2 days over the 3 years.
Uh-huh.
The field, maintaining the field is not an issue. It's not an issue at all.
So I could wait until interest rates got real high, go buy a CD, have you suspend me for a while, just age a few days, come out and collect all kinds of interest.
There you go. There's an experiment I haven't thought about trying yet. Actually, many. We have many, many ideas along those lines, but we better not go there. Actually, we really
oh,
hope
no,
that...
I don't, mind going there at all. I mean, if stocks, for example, a little risky. CD is a pretty sure thing, right?
Yeah.
So there'd be ways of profiting from such a technology. There would be, right? What else have you thought of?
Absolutely. Well, you know, honestly, in our heart, we all sit around and we joke when we have the time, which we have very little of.
Mm-hmm.
We really hope that the first fielded applications in the next few years are going to be in research, medical research, or medical treatment. Probably not medical treatment because we have to move the vertebrate animal testing, which is going to take about 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the application of our technology to help the medical, the search for, in medical research for new cures and treatments for diseases has a tremendous amount of potential.
Well, in that area, just as an example, wouldn't there be great benefit to reversing time so that a disease that had progressed to a certain level could be, in essence, regressed?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's the... one of the biggest areas, and that this is really, I got to tell you, 60% of our research is based on refining the technology and developing it so it can be used for this. Initially, It'll be used in medical for accelerating cure times in research, in test experiments for, you know, development of cures and treatments for diseases. Eventually, though, the hope is that you will actually be able to use it on a living person for the stasis or the regression of a disease.
Yikes. And, you know, why haven't you been on Good Morning America? Why haven't you been on the Today Show? Why haven't you been on the NBC Evening News? 2020?
Yeah.
I don't know. All of them.
Actually, believe it or not, we have been on NBC. We have been in the Wall Street Journal. We do keep a little bit of low profile. Actually, this year is an exciting year for us because we will be bringing all of our research public before the end of the year.
How are you going to do that?
Well,
big press conference, that kind of thing?
Well, the first thing is a lot of our early work is available under Freedom of Information Act. I think many of your listeners know how to find that.
Oh, they do.
And they can look up some of the early work prior to 1988.
All right, Doctor, hold on. We're at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back. But remember, folks, when you do hear that big press conference, just remember you heard it here first. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark newsletter has been reporting subjects that we talk about right here on the show. And just like the show, After Dark has been evolving and changing and keeping folks guessing. You never know what you're going to get next, but it's always a lot of fun. Give yourself a treat and subscribe. Just log on to my website, artbell.com. Go to the library link on the left. You'll find the After Dark link in the menu there. Click, and you can subscribe on the secure server. Or call any time of the day or night, toll-free, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 for only $39.95. You'll receive this four-color magazine every month for a year. Subscribe right now, and you'll get two free issues, 14 for the price of 12. Subscribe online at artbell.com or call right now, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.
One thing's for certain, anything can happen on Coast to Coast AM. No ands, ifs, or buts about it.
I'm with a society, but it's not the Masons. It's an offshoot called the Mystical Order of the Declawed Gerbil. And,
You lion sucker. The Mystical Order of the Declawed Gerbil, my eye. I don't believe it for a second.
Oh, really?
Declawed Gerbil. Declawed Gerbil. There's no such thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a rigorous process to get in.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I'm sure a lot of your members end up in the hospital, too. Goodbye, you're out of here. Mr. Gorder, the declawed gerbil, my butt. That I shouldn't have said. Magnet. His premise was, you take this magnet in conjunction with the rest of his machine, and you place the electromagnet on your chest and plug the damn thing in. Well, it's an electromagnet, all right. It's gigantic, and if it were sitting on your chest, I'm holding it on the webcam. If you'll go to my webcam photo right now, I'm going to leave it up there tonight. You'll see me holding this electromagnet. You can see the cord on it. I have never plugged it in, nor have I used the rest of the machine yet. I've always been afraid to, because this would create, and he even admitted it gets very hot, creates a gigantic electromagnetic field directly on your chest. And I've always wondered whether that was really a good idea or not, you know? So I've never really had the guts to plug it in and put it on my chest, or put it on my chest and plug it in, I guess, in that order. But I wanted you to see the electromagnet. I'm holding it in my hand. If you'll check out, if you go to my website and you click on the left on program, you'll see Art Bell Studio Cam. Take a look at that photograph. Take a look at that electromagnet. Would you put that on your chest and plug it in? I don't think so, as Ross Mitchell would say, but you might. All right. We'll be right back with Dr. Anderson. Then we have the best radio in the world, the CC Radio Plus. Hands down, runaway, no contest, best radio in the world. $159.95.
which is a cutesy way of saying $160. It's a lot of money for radio. This is a lot of radio. It's like the last radio you'll have to buy. It's AM, and the AM reception is unparalleled. You will hear stations other radios don't even know exist. FM also, of course. Superb. TV audio. Weather radio. NOAA Weather. NOAA Weather Alert. The entire radio is designed to render human speech, particularly so that talk shows are come in with particular clarity, but, you know, it's so much more than that. It's got a digital clock built in with an alarm, a lighted dial, a sleep timer, simple one-button memory, very intuitive radio all the way down the line. Power cord is included, or if you want to use it on batteries, it'll go 250 hours on four D-cell batteries. To me, this is different, but the modern equivalent of the transoceanic. Remember that great old radio by Zenith? I mean, this thing is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So if you want the best, here's where you buy it. Sea Grain Company, call them in the morning at 6:30 a.m., 9:30 back east at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. You want to know what it's like to have a little taste of space? You only have but to walk outside. Now, if you really, really would like to explore space, and I mean deep space, try and imagine, close your eyes and imagine seeing deep star clusters. Imagine seeing the rings of Saturn, Mars. Imagine seeing the craters on the moon in such detail that you'll feel like you're walking across them. Well, if you get one of these downtown gigantic telescopes from Hardin Optical, we've got two versions of gigantic telescopes. And one is a 6-inch diameter. That's a big mama. The other is a gigantic mama, about 8 inches in diameter. And, oh, when you see UPS bring these babies, you're not going to believe it. The 6-inch is $299. The 8-inch, $399. Both will take you deep into space. The number to call for the best telescope for the money you'll ever buy is 1-877-447-4847. 877-447-4847, or see it online before you buy at forthenightsky.com. That's F-O-R, forthenightsky.com. Call them in the morning. The 8-inches, scopes are not going to be with us very long. 877-447-4847. Just like that. Through time. Can you imagine? It may be possible. Once again, here is Dr. David Anderson. And Dr. Anderson, by the way, has got to, fly somewhere in the morning, and so we'll have him only here for this next hour, I fear. You're taking off for someplace, right?
Yes, I have to leave here about 6:30, so to head for the airport.
Doctor, you have a videotape. This is something new from, a year ago when we talked.
Yes.
What is this videotape? What's in it? It's called Time Travel, Journeys into Time.
Yes, it's a new video documentary completely about time travel. I guess the best way to describe it is that we tried to challenge people to think about time and time travel by taking them on a journey through the entire history, including the real science of time control technology, time travel itself. We started with the early beliefs about what time was. We talk about time from the standpoint of philosophy, religion, ancient views, even touch on art, but really move very quickly into the science and technology and a lot of the new groundbreaking research is being done all over the world today.
How about your research? Is that in there?
Yes, it's included. Actually, we have more detail on our research in that video documentary, and like I mentioned, this year we're planning on really taking a lot of our research more public than we have in the past.
All right. Let people know how to get. How do you get it?
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, one of the things I wanted to mention, if your viewers are interested, in, we have our association's our website is at www.time-travel.com.
Oh, we've got a link up already.
Okay, great.
But how do you get the tape?
The video itself right now is available. It's just been released. It's available for purchase through our website. It'll be in distribution in your local video stores and
really
on the major major online video shops probably within the next 4 to 6 weeks, depending on where you buy.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
So there's no 800 number to call?
Not right now, no.
Ah, too bad. All right, so if somebody has a computer out there, they can go to my website right now where we've got a link. Just jump right over, and you can order it online. And if they order it, how soon are they going to get it?
It's available. It's in stock, available for shipment right now. So typically within within 4 to 5 business days.
All right. Well, then you're going to get a lot of orders. I hope your website is sturdy.
It's quite actually our website now gets on the order of several million hits a month. As a matter of fact, after your show last year, we were motivated to move to a high-volume server.
I see. Yeah, we motivate a lot of people to do that, actually.
You know, we were quite impressed last year. Literally, seriously, we did. We moved to a high-volume server after your show last year because, unfortunately, we crashed once as a result of all the traffic you brought.
Yeah, we teach lessons in bandwidth. All right, listen, I've got a lot of people tonight to talk to you, so let's open the line and see what we get out there. How about that?
Okay.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Where are you?
Mount Healthy, Ohio.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Dr. Anderson, I was curious. I caught the earlier part of the show, and you were talking about your plasma generator, and I was wondering if it requires an MHD reactor.
An MHD reactor?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's when I said a plasma generator, it's like a plasma generator. Typically what we do is we use a rotational electromagnetic field in an open-air environment. We inject a gas reagent into the center of the field, and then we use a laser array to excite that. Now, the combination of the laser array, modulating the different 12 lasers, and that electromagnetic field help us establish and open the field. It is like a plasma generator.
You're just ionizing a gas field.
To create the initial power required to open the field, yes, you could say that simply is that we're using that to ionize it, if you want to say that. The reagent is used mainly to generate the amount of energy we need to open the field. It's not your classical plasma generator where you're going to have the large iron core, cylindrical core with the heavy electromagnets. It's not the same type. The general approach is the same.
Your control system, it seems to me it must be a very interesting control. I was kind of wondering if you're employing a SQUIDS interface with any of this?
No, but you're right. The control interface is probably... When you look at our research beyond the theoretical and some of the experimental applications that we're doing, one of the most complicated parts of our system, honestly, is the control. I mentioned that we had six injectors around the field. They're actually injector sensor arrays. I'm trying to think if we have an image. We might have some images of that on our website. You might take a look there.
Young lady, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
How do you know enough to be asking these questions?
I'm a physicist.
Great.
Good answer.
Great. This is good. It's good. I enjoy these types of conversations. Yeah, essentially, on every injector sensor array, each of the six, we are pulling in 43 data points. And one of our biggest challenges is that our stability, when we retard time rates inside the field, keeping the field stable is difficult. We try to do it with brute force. We read in 43 data points from six injectors. You can do the math. We feed that into our control system, and then we in turn try to modulate the field real time. And it's one of the biggest challenges we have right now because we cannot keep the field stable. We feel if we could modulate it faster that we'd be able to maintain the stability. So what we've done now is we're trying to, instead of take those 43 data points, we're looking for key characteristics in that data stream and data signal, and we're trying to use those instead of the entire data stream to modulate the field.
I have two more questions, if that's all right.
Go.
One of the questions I had is, are you seeing any residual field diffusion in any of your temporal bubble models or field models?
Okay, when you say diffusion, I can interpret that a couple different ways. When you say the field diffusion...
Do you see the field spilling over or becoming unstable at specific parameters or interfaces?
Yes, absolutely, and actually, this is the biggest area. As a matter of fact, I'd hope if maybe if possible, if you have some experience in this area, you might send an email off to the side. But it's our greatest challenge right now. When we when we begin to, across that boundary layer, when we create a retarded time rate on the other side of the layer, when we retard, that's where the field gets unstable, and we don't know why. What happens is, typically, let me say the boundary of the field has an outer diameter and inner diameter. What happens is, when we retard the time rate so far, we get fluctuations in the inner diameter. When we get that fluctuation in the inner diameter, it essentially collapses when we retard the time rate too much. And that Doppler effect that is typically constrained in the thin boundary layer of the field now is extended across a wider area of the field closer to the center of the core. And when our samples are inside the field and they're exposed to that part of the core, that is where they're damaged. They're damaged by the Doppler effect. Because anytime you have a time rate divergence, when you look at it, and you have a time rate divergence across a layer of space, it also has the effect of Dopplering both in an up and down direction, depending on which way you're going and where you're modulating the field. And that's what we don't understand.
You're using just standard interferometric methods in controlling this? Or is it a distributed system or a smart system or using fuzzy logic?
No, it's a distributed system. Mm-hmm. It's not fuzzy logic. We have on the injector sensor array six of them. We have 6 points outside the field where we use interferometers.
You know what? She sounds like she ought to be working for you.
And you know, I'm you know, actually, in a way, I don't mean to use your show to look. One of the things that our background and on our staff here is all, you know, classical physics, classical mathematics. When you brought up, and I'm sorry, your listener, your name was
Anne.
When you brought up the issue of the stability problem, we feel we're treading in an area that maybe we don't have the experience on staff, whether we don't know. We've actually even employed some chaos theory experts to help us understand. We know what the results are inside the field. We know what we're modulating on the outside. We just do not have the mathematical model that shows why the field goes unstable.
Thank you. Mathematical model isn't that difficult, and you can probably derive it from duality theory of manifolds.
Caller, you think you could contact him privately?
Sure.
It sounds like it's a marriage made in heaven.
Hey, I'm falling in love here.
I hear you. Anne, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Holy mackerel.
I like that call.
I wasn't ready for that one at all. All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hello.
Hello, Art. Dr. Anderson?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is the Zen Man calling from Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay.
I had a comment about the definition of time, or what time is. For years now, I've been meditating, and I've noticed repeatedly this phenomena for about the past 20 years. I'll call it frozen time. It's when a clock, if you keep a clock just outside of the your vision, doesn't matter what kind of clock, mechanical or digital, I've noticed repeatedly that the second hand will freeze. Now, the very moment that you become aware of this, of course, it starts moving again. Now, I've noticed doing this meditative practice called Qigong, which is a control of the heart rate, which might be considered the basic organic measurement of time.
Yogis do that, yes.
Okay. I might be approximating some level of Satori, which might be considered to be the timeless state where the individual's in direct contact with the collective unconscious. And I wondered if Dr. Anderson had any comments.
Well, we're moving into the metaphysical a little bit, but it is a kind of an interesting question in view of the setup he did on the nature of time as well.
Right, it's a non-mechanic-based time effect. And I think it would kind of play into the theory here a little bit.
Well, I tell you, my first reaction is for listeners, and it's surprising to hear me say this because I wouldn't have said this 6 years ago. I believe that eventually the ability to travel or transcend time, if you want to put it that way, will not only come from a technological solution, but also from probably from within the power of the human mind. And what your listener is saying here is very consistent. As I mentioned earlier, you know, Buddhist monks will tell you that they don't understand why we think that time moves when in fact it stays where it is. And in that philosophy, I don't mean to bring in karma, and I'm not an expert here, but the thought is when a person transcends karma and can achieve that pure state, that time past, present, and future all becomes one, and they can see and transcend all time as being stationary and standing still.
Caller, I think he's agreeing with you.
Yes.
All right?
Okay.
All right, thank you very much, and take care.
Sorry, Art, that was a little bit of a long-winded response.
No, that was just fine. I thought he was going in a wrong direction, and then it all came together for me there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hi.
Hey, hi, Stephen.
I can barely hear you.
How you doing, Stephen?
Your name is Stephen?
David.
David.
In South Carolina.
Okay.
I was wondering, within the parameters of the device where you're finding trouble on the low end of digression, have y'all tried any pulse alternative to try to stabilize? And I'm wondering if within the usage of the device at some point in the future, would it be, maybe this is theoretical, I don't know, but would it be any type of device being able to put it one location and one or the other to use in a transportation?
Oh, okay, well, that's enough. Let's hold it right there. A pulse to stabilize, does that make any sense?
Yeah, actually, we do that today. When I talk about modulating the field with our laser array, we do have a pulse configuration employed today.
All right.
We're still experiencing many problems with stability when we retard or slow down the time rate.
All right. What about transportation from one physical location to another, not just through time, but through space, obviously, as well?
Well, what's interesting is, and people are surprised by this comment, the approach of our technology today, as we understand it, does not allow that. And many people, that puts a contradiction in their mind,
Well, a lot of people say, here's something a lot of people say. They say, look, the Earth moves in an orbit around the sun. The Earth rotates, right?
Yes.
So if you move somebody in time, have they not moved in space, and in fact the globe has turned while this has occurred? So wouldn't there be a physical displacement?
Yeah. Actually, the classical time machine from H.G. Wells' movie, The Time Machine, fails for that reason, because if you did have an object that was stationary and moved through time, when you returned, the Earth would no longer be there.
Yes. There you'd be in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, and many people apply that model to what we're doing. Understand what we're doing is completely different. What we have is a contained field, and we're adjusting time rates inside. We're not requiring movement through space to accomplish the time dilation, or we're not claiming to have the classical Wellsian time machine, if you say. But essentially, because we have a field, and the time rate divergence is created inside of the field, wherever that field moves, that object is still inside that field. It is still there.
Very comforting. I mean, you just wouldn't want to pop out in a complete vacuum with enough time and breath to say, damn, and that'd be it.
Exactly.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hello.
Hey, Dr. Anderson. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine tonight. How about yourself? Thank you.
Oh, not bad. I wonder if you could explain to me... physics just fascinates me, and this program is pretty interesting. I just wanted to know if how you could explain how time 2,000 years ago is like the time present today. Or did I misunderstand that?
I'm not sure of what you just said.
Okay, you said that the explanation for time, that there was no explanation for time as far as some parts of physics?
Yes.
Could you explain that to me?
Well, if he could, he would have answered the question when I asked him.
Oh.
The answer is, I think, that he cannot adequately explain that, and I don't really know anybody who can.
Yeah. It fascinates, because, I mean, it goes on. The day goes, you know, and so time must be happening as far as the sun rises and it goes down in the west.
Yeah,
know?
Very good. That's exactly how we measure time, right,
exactly.
Doctor?
Yes, that's a good question. But I guess I would challenge your listener to put him to the test. Okay, so we all know what time is. We see it every day, so we understand it. So what is it? What is time itself?
It's got to be just a day-to-day thing.
but that's insufficient. It is day-to-day. Yes, the sun. We go round, the sun comes up, sun goes down, and we measure.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the totality of time, or is that just sort of our understanding of it as we physically tool around on the planet here?
Well, thank you very much for enlightening me on that.
I'm not sure there was a lot of enlightenment there, but at least we've got the questions right. Thank
I'm just
you.
A little confused, and I'm
all
kind
of
confused.
Sir. We're all confused. Don't worry about it.
It's a pretty interesting subject, and I'm all ears.
All right, indeed. Doctor, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back.
Of the legendary Mothman creature and the dangers of root canals. But there are pictures that very well may gross you out. See for yourself the revolutionary last-ditch treatment that's saving limbs from infection and gangrene when surgery and antibiotics have failed. It's not pretty, but it's great reading, and it's all in the Strange Medicine issue of the After Dark newsletter. It's a good time to get on board and subscribe. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, and you'll get 14 issues for the price of 12. That's two free. Free. The number once again, 1-888-727-5505, or subscribe online at artbell.com. Just hit the library link to the secure server to order the one and only After Dark newsletter.
All right, back into the abyss we jump. Dr. David Anderson. Dr. Anderson, here's a kind of an interesting speculative sort of question, but talk about a breakthrough. Mark from Canton, Ohio asks, Doctor, could you eventually, as you refine your process, send future research data back in time in order to accelerate your own progress?
Well, the answer to that question is today. Today, understand what we do is we can speed up or slow down the time rate in the field. We have not been able to reverse time in the field. So someday, if that was possible, maybe yes. Today, we're not sure, and we're a little bit skeptical whether the technology will actually, this particular technology applied, will allow a negative time, allow a negative time rate to pass the information to the past.
Would that answer the paradox question? You know, the go back in time and kill your grandfather or your father or something or another, and poof, away you go. In other words, the paradox is, in fact, a hard rule, and you can't do that because you can't travel back in time.
I don't believe that. I really don't believe that paradox. And the reason why I would say that, many of your listeners might be familiar with what's called the Tipler cylinder. Frank Tipler, back in 1974, published a paper that showed how reverse time travel through the past is possible using a certain approach. Now, granted, it was very extravagant. It was a large rotating cylinder in space involving a spaceship with tremendous technical performance, but it allowed, physically, it was the first proof that showed time travel to the past was possible. So is it possible within the laws of physics to travel in a negative time direction? Absolutely, yes. So I think someday that will be achieved, and the issue of the grandfather paradox might fall away as being only really just, again, one of those places where our rational mind bumps into its own limitation.
But are you able to help me out at all with that? In other words, if you could travel back, why, what would prevent you from causing all this time havoc?
Technically nothing would create you from having that time creating.
So in
that
other
time
words,
havoc.
as you can take a revolver and put it to your head and blow yourself away and cease to exist in all practical ways.
First off, if it's through relativistic physics, travel in a negative time. If we accomplish that using relativistic physics, then there's no reason why you couldn't travel to the past and alter the past. Now, there is some speculation that says, well, if you do travel to the past, you'll end up in a parallel universe, in a version of reality that's separate from the other parallel universe that's running on where you didn't go back.
So you won't disturb the timeline, the main timeline.
Yeah, that in fact you're affecting now a parallel timeline that has branched off in a different direction. So that's one explanation of a possible answer.
Gotcha, for the paradox. Did you see the movie Frequency?
You know, no, I have not.
What? You haven't seen Frequency? You've got to see that movie right away. You must go rent that movie right away.
No, I'm sure I have it on our shelves in our space-time museum, but I don't think that I have not seen it. No,
trust me, see the movie. The question is as follows. Perhaps before we're able to actually physically travel in time, and this comes from the movie in a way, would you imagine it to be possible to communicate through time?
I believe, yes, I do. I do. I believe that across long distances of time, if I can say it that way, yes, that communication, especially communication to the past, would be achieved prior to actually sending mass to the past, meaning, you know, a person, a ship, or something like that.
Yes, because of the problems inherent in biological transfers.
Exactly.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Anderson. Hi.
Hello. How you doing?
Okay, sir. Where are you?
Greetings from Chicagoland.
From Chicago.
Yes. I had a question for Dr. Anderson. And by the way, I've only been listening for about a week now, so it's great to hear something out there that actually is along the same lines that I think about, Art. Dr. Anderson, on the actual field that you said you generate, that it's a circular field, have you had any experiments when you put something in it, say, that goes into the field and out of the field at the same time?
Something extending right through the field.
Exactly. And say, like a solid object, does the field stay, does it just affect one part of the object, or does it actually encompass the entire part of the object?
Good question.
Okay. The answer is that it does not engulf the entire object. But moving things through a field is something that we learned that we don't do. First off, if it's a living organism moving through the field, you're passing it through the boundary layer where all that time differential is being absorbed, including that Doppler effect, which means we pass a living organism through the boundary layer of the field. Once it's set up, then that living organism is going to be destroyed, guaranteed. With regards to material objects, I mean non-living material objects, we have put objects in the field. We get some strange effects, but nothing that would you know engulf that entire object in the field. It pretty much has no effect.
I see.
We have run signals back and forth in and out of the field, both optical and through conductors in and out of the field. And the results we see are very, very predictable.
I see. I wondered because the caller earlier had asked about traveling kind of through time, and this goes towards a warp, like a warp drive, if you will. If you have something that can actually encompass that field where you get some particle off of it, it actually could go through time, kind of as a warp drive almost. That's why I was wondering that.
Yeah, we call it a time warp field because we slightly twist time. I mean, maybe we probably shouldn't have used the word warp in hindsight, but that was 13 years ago that we put the label on it, and now it's stuck, so.
I understand.
All right,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. Hi, Art. Hi, Anderson there. I was just wondering if you've tried this. I know you said you're having a problem, with the Doppler effect there. So that's basically a harmonic problem you're having. Is that with the stability of the lasers, basically, is what you're having a problem with?
Well, what happens is, you know, the boundary layer of the field always has a Doppler effect. But when we slow the time rate, the thickness of the boundary layer expands into the core of the field. So typically, the Doppler effect is constricted to the outer shell of the field. When we retard the time rate or slow down the time rate and that boundary layer becomes thicker, it collapses into the core, and basically anything inside the field, most of it can be exposed to the Doppler. Typically, we like to keep it on the outside where it's away from the samples or instrumentation inside the core.
I see. Are you familiar with how our CRT cathode ray tube works, the color with the, it's under vacuum and you have three electron guns shooting
sure.
through... Well, have you ever simulated or tried doing this maybe in a vacuum or probably in a zero gravity effect?
No, we have not done it. We have not done it in a vacuum, and we have not speculated about doing it in a zero gravity effect, mainly because it's not practical due to the size of the equipment and the power required.
One other thing is, do you create a large enough field to actually put a video camera camcorder that, and reproduce and the field, and then play it back and see what it sees.
Yes, we actually in the current one that we've done, we've put target objects in with a small digital recorder, and we've pulled them out. We had some problems in certain areas because of the interference with the camera, but it showed that the object is there in the field, even though the boundary layer of the field is opaque. But when that field goes opaque, is it really there? Is the camera and the object really there, or is the camera and the object really somewhere else? I guess I can't answer that.
Have you, well, then you've taken an operating, say, video camera to the point where it begins to disappear?
No, well, when the camera is inside, we put a very small digital camera and recorder inside the field with an object, a target object, in front of the lens. And we showed that as we retarded the field or accelerated the field, and we saw the opaqueness from the outside, that yes, the video was pretty much undisturbed except for some interference, minor interference. So the question was that camera still seeing the object inside the field when we started the field? The answer was yes. So they're still there somewhere.
So prior to doing that experiment, what did you expect to see?
Exactly that. This is really a... All the results we've seen are like a general relativistic effect, and I don't mean to throw it out that way. Pretty much what we see is very predictable. The only thing that's not predictable is what happens in that thin boundary layer.
Gotcha.
We still don't understand why everything happens there
the
way it does.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I have done a lot of research on the Internet, and I think I may have an understanding of how gravity works, and I wonder if this may have some relation to an understanding of time. My understanding basically assumes that the fabric of space and time, the ether, does exist, that the force of this ether or zero-point energy is stretching the fabric of space and time equally in all directions, except when it is in the presence of matter. This is so because matter attracts the zero-point energy in towards itself, sustaining itself, and in this manner, the fabric of space and time is significantly distorted around a massive object. In a massive body system like the Earth and Moon, there's less zero-point energy pressure in between them. Basically, I believe that gravity is a large-scale Casimir effect. If this is so, Dr. Anderson, I would like to know what you think about this explanation of gravity, and if you think that this flow rate of time, or that the flow rate of time, could be related to zero-point energy.
Okay. There's probably three responses in there. The first one, does a mass in space distort space and time? Absolutely, yes. I mean, that's I accept that. That would be part of classical physics. Absolutely, yes. Does the second half of that, with regards to zero point energy? I mean, obviously, I'm a little bit familiar with some of it, but I'm not an expert on Nikola Tesla's work in that area or other people's work in that area. It's even sad because I'm sitting here on Long Island where many of Tesla's facilities were, but I'm not familiar with that. There are many similarities between with regards to the mass distorting space and time around a mass in space. Absolutely, yes, I agree. With the other ones, I'm probably not qualified to answer.
If you could look at a single atom inside your field, what would you see? How would you say that the field actually affects this atom? Is it at the stage of the parts of the atom, particle parts, the gluons, muons, and so forth, or would it be on the electron? Or I mean, it's got to affect it in some way.
I agree. Yes.
Well, actually, it's a good question. But remember, we're talking about, and you mentioned gravity, and when I talk about a general relativistic effect, this is the whole theory about how gravity can affect and dilate time. When you have a field like this, or let's take the simple example of the high-speed rocket ship, where you have somebody traveling out into space, coming back 10 years, and the Earth has passed 1,000 years.
Right.
That individual and his biochemical structure and his perception of time and his life and his body and his living organism have not experienced anything different. His atoms have not been altered. His electrons, his subatomic structure is still the same. His evolution of himself as a living organism has not changed any differently than if he was on the Earth for 10 years, assuming that all the gravitational issues and all that are the same. So the answer is no. We don't expect, nor do we see, or expect any changes in structure, cellular structure, or atomic structure. In the boundary layers, it's a totally different story. All bets are off there.
Yeah, Art,
Yes, sir.
Can I throw in a philosophical comment here?
Yes.
I think it's appropriate. In thinking about the idea of parallel universes and time travel and a lot of the other stuff you see on your show, it makes me wonder if we and all of the created universe is nothing but a complicated and intricate computer program / hologram that exists inside the mind of God.
Let's just use the word matrix and everybody.
Matrix.
All right?
I like that word.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe we'll all find out shockingly one day. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. David Anderson. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have several questions. I don't know if I'll have, I don't know if you'll let me ask all of them.
Well, I don't know if I will either, but go ahead and try.
But anyway, I am a kid who listens to your show all the time.
How old are you?
I'm 13.
All right, first question is, why are you up at this hour?
Because I've been wanting to talk about the moon thing, but since that subject's over.
No, it's not. We're going to do a final hour of open lines. We'll talk about that and time travel.
Okay.
But you have a question for Dr. Anderson.
Yeah. I am a long-time fan of time travel, and now that I hear that science fiction is actually coming through, I was just wondering, when will this be out to the public?
Okay.
Well, actually, we released some information to the public. Like I mentioned, there's been several different publications. Let me throw a few at you. If you check the Wall Street Journal, Fox Television is going to be bringing back a show called In Search Of, and they're actually going to be showing some glimpses inside and outside of our laboratory and some information about our work that'll be airing next month. Our public release, also under Freedom of Information, you can find some early work prior to 1988, and within the next 2 months, we're going to be releasing and making public a new research paper that talks about some of the power problems we've been having with the field, but it's going to give a complete overview of the current status of the time warp field technology and our understanding of it. So
the answer to your question, caller, is some of the information is out there if you know where to look, and he just told you. Listen, caller, thank you. You're right. We don't have a lot of time. But I want to ask this, doctor. How much do you know that you can't tell me of proprietary information? How much information is there that you can't discuss on the radio?
Well, there's certain things. Obviously, we have clients who fund some of our research, and we do research for them, and we have confidentiality agreements. That's straightforward. I assume more you'd be talking about what aspects of the technology and performance we can't talk about.
No, because that would be, you couldn't answer that. Yeah. Are there aspects of it that you can't talk about?
I'd say it this way. The answer to that question is yes, there are aspects that I cannot talk about, and obviously any time you have research of this nature, what is released publicly is typically a generation behind what is really going on.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that says a whole lot. Gee, we can all wonder where the next generation is that's going on right now. Oh, my.
Well, right. This is going to be a fascinating 2 years. I mean, when you look at what's going on, want to talk about the Time Travel Research Center at all, one of my biggest passions is people really need to take a look at what's going on with our understanding of time. I mean, it is being turned upside down. Within the last 2 years, there have been at least 4 or 5 significant events that have totally, you know, validated new views of time, but sometimes we just race through life and we don't see these things.
That's right. Well, let me plug it for you again. There's a new videotape, Time Travel Journeys into Time. It eventually will be in your video store, but if you can't wait, and I know I can't, you can go to the doctor's website, which is linked right now on my website, and you can actually order the tape right there. How much is the tape, by the way?
The tape is $39.
$39. That's not much money for a good grasp of an understanding of time and a glimpse into the lab where you're working. And you do get a glimpse in?
Absolutely. Get a glimpse and a summary of our technology, an overview of our performance, our system configuration, and many other details, too. It's a complete exploration into the nature of time and time travel from 20,000 years ago to the latest groundbreaking technology.
Doctor, I hope you can get a little sleep before your flight. Boy, has this been a good program.
Thank you, Art. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, my friend. Good night.
Good night.
Time travel. And I'll tell you. Anyway, listen, we're going to do open lines when we come back, and that young fellow who I had to cut off is welcome to call back and talk about whether or not we went to the moon or time travel or whatever else is on anybody's mind out there. Open lines when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
The March issue of After Dark is not for the faint of heart. If you're the least bit squeamish when the March issue comes in the mail, you might think twice about reading it. Not only are there scary articles about the legendary Mothman creature and the dangers of root canals, but there are pictures that very well may gross you out. See for yourself the revolutionary last-ditch treatment that's saving limbs from infection and gangrene when surgery and antibiotics have failed. It's not pretty, but it's great reading, and it's all in the Strange Medicine issue of the After Dark newsletter. It's a good time to get on board and subscribe. Call right now, 1-888-727-5505, and you'll get 14 issues for the price of 12. That's two free. Free. The number once again, 1-888-727-5505, or subscribe online at artbell.com. Just hit the library link to the secure server to order the one and only After Dark newsletter.
Art Bell welcomes a variety of interesting guests to his program. Some are names you may not know. Others are names you know very well.
This is Leonard Nimoy. Leonard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. we have such a short time that I feel obligated to literally pummel you with questions.
Okay, go.
How much chance do you think there really is that we will be contacted?
There are something like 4 billion stars in our galaxy alone, and there are billions of other galaxies. Each of those stars are potential suns just like ours, and that means that if one out of every million of those stars has planets around, and one out of every million of those has some kind of life on it, then the numbers tell us that the chances are very, very great that there is life out there someplace.